I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Hello, friends. You're now listening to the Lifestyle, Leisure, and Sports Show you never knew was two of those things.
I think we can all acknowledge that if this fails, you two will be fired and I will remain. So, no pressure.
Bo Bishop, a regional media icon. Winner of Emmys. Purveyor of the good life.
Sir, you don't know that for a fact.
I just said it on the radio.
Also, two guys this company named Employee of the Month.
What are you talking about?
Paul Hogan is Hulk Hogan's brother.
Look it up.
Because it's Hulk Hogan. That's his real name.
One guy is from Australia. The other one is from Tampa.
You mean he's from Hollywood, brother?
Not brothers. Chops.
Yes, they are.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's do it live on a Tuesday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Uncle Dom will join at 10:33. Jody Shelley from Frozen Edmonton at 11:33. We hit you with the real truth in the 10 o'clock hour. NFL Blitz coming up at 11. We had planned to do a kind of an NFL Browns Bengals State of the Union, and there's, we'll get into some of that as the show goes along. But this deal that happened this morning between Netflix and their push into live streaming, we are, but you're going to see it tonight, right? Because the Buckeye game's on Peacock. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. So you're going to see this tonight. You saw an NFL playoff game. An NFL playoff game on Peacock last weekend, 2 weekends ago, rather. We've dealt with now 2 years of Amazon Prime when it comes to Thursday Night Football, the streaming only service there, minus the home markets. And now this is another streamer, and this is, and Chops, you have a decent handle on this as well. This is one of the streamers that actually profits is Netflix, right? Like the rest of them are kind of hoping, like Max, I think, does well, but the rest are trying to find footing so they can actually be profitable.
Yeah, and it's hard to really determine whether or not Prime is successful because it's not the reason that people have Prime Video. They just have Amazon Prime and then it's available. And they're already starting to think about doing ads. But Netflix has an ad one too. They're all going to have ads eventually, and you can either pay out of it or you can deal with ads. But Netflix still has the largest subscription base. I do think the password sharing thing did work out for them. It caused a lot of consternation for a couple of months, but eventually there were enough things on Netflix that I wanted to watch, so we got our own account instead of sharing my parents' account, which I had done for a decade, really. And Netflix, it's funny, Jayla and I were just talking about this last week, because Netflix has gone into the sports world in the documentary scene. We talked about the Formula One show. They had the golf show as well. And I was like, the last thing really remaining for them, and especially as leagues are definitely more open, as you mentioned, Peacock, I talked about Amazon Prime there. They're more open to being on the streamers. That's like the last white whale for Netflix to get. If they can get live sports, then all of a sudden they can become a bit of a one-stop shop. So I think that this deal with the WWE, which will start next January for Monday Night Raw, that'll be huge. If they can prove that, you know, infrastructure-wise, they can handle live programming and show a live sporting event. I understand that WWE is, you know, the preordained nature of it, but it's still live, and it's still, you know, it's live cameras, and that production value is the same concepts that would go into a basketball game or a baseball game or even an NFL game if they could find their way into that contract. So I think it's a really smart play by Netflix, and I've thought for years that, like, man, I wonder what the next thing is going to be. And now it's kind of come full circle because it went away for a while. But I remember when I was like early in college, I was like, I think the thing Netflix is going to try to do is like buy ESPN. It never ended up happening, but now ESPN the NFL might be available.
The NFL might buy ESPN. You saw that story last week as well, that the NFL may buy ESPN.
Somebody's going to buy ESPN.
So apparently, from what I understand on that, and you get to know some people working, you know, around the NFL like I have for the last 6 years or so, and you get to know some people at NFL Network. And from what I'm hearing there, there's a ton of contracts that are up that haven't been, in terms of the talent, that have not been renegotiated. And so there is, I think, a genuine fear that the NFL will buy or could buy a portion or some. And I saw Awful Announcing had this story. Others had it as well, that they could buy a portion or all of ESPN and then run the NFL through the ESPN model, and that ESPN could be kind of the tour, and then you got ESPN Plus and all of that, that they merge those two things together. This Netflix deal with WWE. I don't watch the wrestling anymore. As a kid, I did a lot, and I know a lot of buddies of mine who still love it and watch it. And my kids haven't gotten into it yet. I don't know if they will or not. But I do remember, I am old enough to remember that WWE kind of legitimized USA Network when back in the old cable days. Like when WWE was on, when Raw was on Monday night, and it might have been WWF at that time, when it was on Monday night, that's a flagship operation for a cable company. And what you can do after that, you would put a show that you wanted to launch, you would put it on after Raw on Monday night, and you would get the carryover there. Like it was a flagship. It was the way that the NBA, TNT views the NBA, right? Like yeah. Get them into this, and then we can push them into other things. So it has been a staple on cable television my entire life. And so for it to be something that is now going to be in the Netflix window, look, most we have Netflix, and again, this isn't something that I consume, so it doesn't affect me much. But the bigger play here is what all of these streamers are trying to get. I remember, God almighty, this is years ago when I first came back and James and I were doing the show, and we would say the only things that you can't DVR are live sports you care about in Game of Thrones, because it would get ruined if you didn't. The water cooler on it, or the way that it would go viral as soon as something happened, it was impossible to DVR it. You couldn't watch it later. And while WWE is predetermined, it is live sports. And so the live sports entity, whether it's what's happening with Peacock and the Big Ten brand, whether it's happening here with Netflix and Raw, Amazon Prime at the highest level with the NFL, the NBA is hoping that Apple TV gets involved in their operation at some point, and now this NFL, perhaps an ESPN Plus, Disney Plus model. What you're having is they've filled up their catalogs, right? They have all of their back catalogs are now with each of the streamers. And you talked about this last week about how some of the HBO shows are being farmed out now to Netflix. So you watch Band of Brothers on Netflix as opposed to just keeping it exclusive. So now you can get it on Max, and then Netflix is paying them for the back catalog as well. But live sports was the last thing that was out there. And I thought that we would get to a point. I honestly thought this would come quicker. I thought the NFL would leverage the streamers the last time around when they did their TV deals. I thought that they would leverage Amazon and Apple and YouTube TV, that they would leverage the streamers. They didn't. They kept it to the networks, but that's large part because it's most of the people that own NFL teams are old men, and they still want things on network television. And guess what? Network television still works. Like the ratings that the NFL, it's still a bigger number. Anytime you see a streaming number versus a network number, it's not close. The network number always wins. The loser here is you. It's all of you, because you are all going to have to, if you want to consume all of this stuff, you're going to have to pay for all of it. And Chops, you bring up the point, and I noticed this. It annoyed the hell out of me with the Peacock game. I thought, all right, I'm paying for Peacock. Why are you showing me ads? Why are you showing me commercials? That's the whole point. Like in our head, we're predetermined that I buy Netflix, I buy HBO, I buy this. And when I buy those things, I don't have to pay for, I don't have to watch commercials because I've already given you my money. So now they're dual revenue streaming it.
Yeah. Ship has sailed on that. All of them are going
to
have
gone.
Ads now.
It's over. So we're all going to have to be upcharged in order to not have the commercials. And the loser here is us. It's the consumer, because we're going to have many of you out there listening probably have it already. There's going to be 10 little images on your screen, and you're going to jump into this portal world, and then you're stuck there, and you're there forever, and they got you. It's better that for them, it's even better than the cable, because you're not going to flip to something else. You mentioned that you were flipping this weekend. You know why every time you flip, there was another commercial on something you were flipping to? Because it's all coordinated.
Yeah, they all want to be a commercial at the same time.
So that they're all at commercial at the same time. Well, you can't do that anymore when you're in a streamer. You're done. You're cooked. You're in it.
No, and actually, that's why a game works the best, because a game dictates when you can take a commercial. You can't just take it whenever you want. The problem with the whole streaming service game was that Netflix got really successful, and then instead of people benefiting off having partnerships and getting licensing fees from Netflix, which was kind of the old TV model of when cable became, they paid all the networks for their syndicated programming, so they'd have stuff to fill up the day, and that's what Netflix was doing, but they just put it on a streamer. And instead of continuing to do that, all the people decided, well, we'll just make our own streamer, people will come over to us, and we'll make all the money. Like none of them are profitable at this point. Like they it was a bad business move overall. That's why HBO Max became Max, so they could put everything in one place and hopefully get subscribers there. And I don't think that's
Paramount
working
Plus
either.
Is doing that with Showtime. Like, that's all going to be one now.
And so what they have to do next, and we're close to it, both on Prime Video and Apple TV Plus have this, that you can, like, buy your subscription to other apps within theirs. And, you know, it's so it's a little bit more robust than, say, just your smart TV with all your apps there. It's right there, and you can just click on it, and it'll show you, like, what you can watch on that service. You can just click on it right from there. It's also searchable in that, too, that you can search the one place and the five different services you have will all come up whether or not you get that. It's rudimentary, and it's not every service, but once that happens, it will just be that reinvention of cable on the internet, but that will make things a little bit easier once it's all within one hub, whether that's an app or if Roku and Amazon Fire Stick or whoever gets involved with it, somebody needs to get to that point. And some smart TVs already kind of work around it and allow you to search all the apps that you're logged into. But I just think it's going to be much easier for people to stomach once it's all on there, but you're still going to end up paying the $80, $100 a month that you pay for cable anyways. And so that will be, I think, the final. If streaming figures that out and one service can offer you all the services and you can pay a lump sum and it's one thing, that'll probably be the final cord cutter for most people who still even have cable if sports like are on there.
Yeah.
It'll just be back to the cable model. The thing with the WWE being on Netflix, it's just one of its shows, at least in the United States. Mm-hmm. Like, all over the world, you'd be able to see the whatever shows they have or the rest of their shows. But the main driver for WWE, at least in years past, has been their library. It's been the ability to go back and watch thousands of hours of old content. I mean, you were talking about USA Network, you know, in the 90s, similarly with Turner, and TNT was WCW Monday Nitro, and those two, I mean, were huge drivers of subscribers to cable. Similarly, with Comedy Central was another one of them, that they had programming that you had to watch, and so they would build an entire network around those, you know, those niche programs. And for this, I do wonder if they go away from Peacock, does it drive subscribers off of Peacock? And NBC, seeing this, went, oh, we'll just go back into live sports and do what they do with the Big Ten. Because you're right.
Great question.
Nebraska, Ohio State is tonight. That's only on Peacock. They had the Ohio State, Iowa game available on NBC, but you could also watch it on Peacock. You could have gone back to see it on Peacock. But I think there are, I want to say, five games left to go on Peacock this season, including tonight's contest. So if you want to watch the basketball Buckeyes, then whenever the, you know, the playoff, and whenever the, I don't know if March Madness is still with Turner, how long that's through, but expect one of these to be a player in that renegotiation.
Yeah, the it's a fascinating thing that's happening. And you, when you think about the, that library, I mean, so that's on for the people that the WWE library is on Peacock right now. You can watch all of it. So the WWE's double dipping here, right? They're getting their Peacock library and then they're getting their Netflix money for the Monday Night Raw thing. So this is something that this will be a job for Tony Petitti going forward. You know, we're swimming in the cash of the last deal that happened in the Big Ten. These will all be ready to go the next time you go get a bite at the apple. And this is going to be the reality of how you consume sports going forward. It's going to be through these apps and it's going to be through streaming. And if you're like me and you're a man, you're 40 and you're used to and like and enjoy the cable model, you're going to have it. You're just going to pay for it the same way you're doing it now. And I just hope at some point they get to a point where it's convenient. As I hope it's to a point where, like you described, Chops, where, and I know there are, one of my smart TVs does that, like it kind of aligns everything for me, but they need to get to that point to where you can, it's far more easy to navigate between things. You can't, you don't want it to be in a situation, I mean, they want it to, but as from the consumer perspective, you want to be able to watch a couple of games at the same time, and you want to be able to bounce back around, like, most people aren't just stuck on something for 3.5 hours.
If I'm watching a college football game, most of the time I want to be able to click down and see other live college football games that I can click on right away. And so sometimes when the multiple games that you're watching are on ESPN or on Fox, you can get that. But if you have a game on Fox and a game on ESPN you want to watch, you have to go out of the app and go into the new one and load it up and then load it. And then the commercial break's already over from the previous game anyways.
Yeah, it's cooked. So that's big news in the sports entertainment world. There could be some big news affecting both of the Ohio NFL teams. We will get to that coming up next. Take a look at the NFL championship weekend as well. Loaded up here on a Tuesday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you consider yourself a Buckeye fan, you've come to the right place. This is your Heritage Sports Talker and home of Ohio State Athletics, The Fan, Ohio sports destiny. With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
And gear up with the Tipico Sportsbook. Get in on the betting action right now. Playoff football, so much fun. Basketball, so much more. Take advantage of the massive odds boosts on your favorite teams and players from the biggest payouts. Try out the new Flex Parlay. Cash in on your bets, even if you miss a leg or two. Claim your new sign-up bonus now. Get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Let's sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100. Get $100 in bonus bets. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions do apply. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER for more on that. It appears, I haven't seen anything official yet, but it appears that Brian Callahan is going to be the next head coach of the Tennessee Titans. There was a report yesterday from Schefter that they weren't going to let him leave the building. Brian was most recently the offensive coordinator for the Cincinnati Bengals. Obviously, Zach calls the plays down there, but nevertheless, the offensive coordinator. Callahan obviously has lineage too. His dad is Bill Callahan, the offensive line coach in Cleveland, considered by most to be a top three or four offensive line coach in the history of the sport. The situation with Callahan is interesting. That we talked about yesterday, this idea of Dan Campbell into the conference final, Antonio Pierce really good closing out the season with the Raiders. You have D'Amico Ryan's excellent year one with Houston. And you had this former player kind of renaissance of let's find a player. Let's find somebody who will inspire. And then the other side of that is let's find from the Shanahan tree. I mean, that's really still it. And the Shanahan tree is that's McVay and Shanahan and all of that. And that gets you eventually the Stefanskis and McDaniel and all of the Fleurs. All that stuff comes from that same similar tree where you run that wide zone and all of the plays look the same, or at least that's the purpose of that. So Brian would be in the latter form of that. I'm not sure what impact, if any, it would have in Cincinnati. And Cincinnati's been very forthright with they want him to have these opportunities with Brian. I'm actually a little surprised that Lou Anarumo, he just must not interview well, because he's been really good there for a while and seems to be a leader of men. And anytime we talk to any of our buddies down in Cincinnati, the defensive coordinator, Lou Anarumo, they're always like, this is the year he's going to go. And his name's not surfacing anywhere. So I know they didn't have the best year. They had some injuries, lost Jesse Bates. But
nobody interested in hiring DCs. It's not completely off, no. But obviously offense is more the line. I think it was Bobby had this stat, and I think it was 2021 was the year he had every offensive coordinator. Now that Brian Callahan is going to the Titans or reportedly going to the Titans, every offensive coordinator in the NFL has turned over since 2021. There's not a single offensive coordinator who was the OC in 2021 that is still there. It might be 2020 or 2021, but either way, that's
it's
pretty
a long
big
time.
Yeah.
So complete turnover there. The far bigger impact of the two Ohio teams, I think, would be Bill. So Bill Callahan in Cleveland it's a masterclass in coaching. Now, he could be like me and my dad, and they want nothing to do with each other, and he wouldn't want to coach with his kid. I mean, I can't imagine like telling my dad, you're going to come work for me. Like, that would not go well. But maybe they have a much better relationship, and it's fine. I don't know. But the notion that to go work with his son would seem like kind of a no-brainer, like a bucket list thing. So I would assume that Bill would follow him down to Tennessee, and that would have an incredible impact in Cleveland, because all of the injuries, all of the depth building, everything that they've been through up there on the offensive line, the one constant has been Callahan. It's the one constant voice, the way he teaches it, the way he develops it. What he did with DeJuan Jones this year was nothing short of remarkable. And if that does in fact happen, that is a tremendous loss for Cleveland.
Well, and also if you're Brian Callahan, who knows what's going to happen exactly with Derrick Henry, but I think the hiring of Brian Callahan shows that the Tennessee Titans are ready. We've talked about that. Get a little bit more sexy. We got a new quarterback in Will Levis. Can we cultivate him? Let's go for a more offensive-minded idea here, and that's the change from Vrabel into a guy who was an offensive coordinator. So I don't know if they're going to need the run blocking, but with a young quarterback, you'd still want a great pass-blocking offensive line, and it sounds like Callahan can do it on both ways. But it's weird, focusing on an offensive line coach, and I feel like run blocking pumps into your head faster than pass-blocking when you think of that. And both teams that we're talking about here, the Browns and the Titans, are likely going away from their run-oriented offense at the same time. So that's another change to keep in mind. That real quick on working with your dad, would you rather buy a ranch and he has to come out and work on your ranch, or he becomes one of the friends on Bishop and Friends?
Oh, my God.
Neither one is appealing to you?
No.
Could you hear your dad doing updates at the top of the hour?
Oh, my God.
Trying to get that sponsor read in before the music went out.
Just be yelling at you why something doesn't work. Never would be his fault. No. No. God, no. Dreadful. Dreadful. I mean, that's why the first chance I had to get move out of Ohio or move out of Montana, I moved to Florida. Like it's, you can't get a whole lot further from that. No, I kid. But the, yeah, so I think that is something to watch, certainly that part of it. You know, the damnedest thing, Reese, and I know you've taken notice of this, the Cleveland Browns have not acknowledged their coaching changes as an organization.
Nope. Nothing to see here. Stump Mitchell's gone on a media tour.
Stump Mitchell's doing media tours. Alex Van Pelt talked with Jake Trotter. Okay, so that
happened. Gave him a quote.
Stump Mitchell has been on every podcast in Cleveland. He's been on every radio show. He's done everything. And Andrew Berry is available yesterday, and the reporters there are asking him about the coaching changes, and he's saying we're not going to comment on it until the entire staff is complete. So I don't understand it. Like, why would you not acknowledge that this has happened? Yeah, we've made some changes. By the way, everybody else in the NFL is saying, yeah, we interviewed this coach, we interviewed this coordinator, we've interviewed this head coach, we've interviewed this. They're like, eh, nothing to see here. And I just think like it creates animus that doesn't need to be there between them and the people that cover them.
It's weird because it kind of goes along that lines that I was talking about, where it was pretty clear with what Ohio State has done coaching wise that they wanted to have their guy before they made other coaching changes, which I think is a good strategy because you want to make sure if you don't get your guy,
you can maybe still hold
on to the guy that's currently there. But the Browns didn't do that. They have fired these people. We know there's enough sourcing. The people themselves.
The people are the sources.
So the Browns,
where did you hear Stump Mitchell's not employed from the Browns? Stump Mitchell?
If Callahan follows his son down to Tennessee, they don't have any offensive coaches left besides Stefanski, really, right?
I got O'Shea at receiver.
Pretty much. That's it?
Yeah.
No, fired their tight ends coach, fired their running backs coach. I guess they haven't officially. It's just another, it's another simple thing that they just make complicated. I don't get it.
I just think like if Callahan leaves, like Bill Callahan is as important as any hire. I mean, he's as critical as the Jim Schwartz hire was. Like that's how critical it was to hire him when Stefanski came in. And if he goes to coach with his kid and goes down to Tennessee, then acknowledge it. Like don't act like it hasn't happened. Say thanks for your time. Thanks for the effort, man. It's been a great run. I don't get it. I don't understand it at all. NFL won big this weekend. The ratings obviously just through the roof. They're going to win big again this weekend as well. Take an early look at championship weekend coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you're starting your day any other way, you're doing it wrong. Morning Juice with Bobby and Beamer.
Weekdays starting at 6.
The Fan.
Us.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
All right, NFL Championship Weekend heading your way all on Sunday, Championship Sunday. This is the way it's always been, 3 o'clock in the early game on CBS with our good friends at Channel 10, Kansas City and Baltimore, and then Detroit and San Francisco in the late game on Fox. The NFL gets, I mean, this, you're going to be a ratings bonanza no matter what, but this checks about every box. You talk about the mixture of iconic franchises and star power and long-starved fan bases like Detroit. We know that Detroit rarely gets to flex like this. Cleveland in recent years has been able to flex like this because they've had, whether the successes of LeBron James with the Cavs or even the last few years with the Browns, where when they get a spot on a big national window, you kind of see the power of that fan base. And I think Detroit is showing that as well. Huge numbers for their game against the Bucks. You have to remember that all of these Rust Belt northern states, there's a tremendous amount of expats that have relocated around the country. There's a ton of people in Michigan who live around the country who grew up Lions fans, and now they're coming out of the woodwork in the biggest way possible. So it'll be a monster Sunday from the NFL perspective. I thought the NFL crushed it in the divisional round about as good as they could. I don't know how long they've had that schedule, but that 3 o'clock, 6:30 schedule Saturday, Sunday was money. To not go into 11 o'clock, to not have to deal with that, to be done around 10, to go from, there wasn't much leg time either, guys. I mean, you kind of went from one game right to the next, both days. It was pretty money. It was like 15, 10 minutes between, and then you were on to the next game, which was pretty awesome. I had thought about if would I prefer this if one of these games was Saturday at 6:30 and the other was Sunday at 6:30 versus an entire football meat sandwich on Sunday. I'm not quite ready to make a decision on which one I prefer. This is the way it's always been, is the way it is, the way that it'll be this Sunday.
I like the doubleheader on Sunday, I think. I enjoy saying, okay, I'm locking in. Here's the football. Instead of two different days having to figure out my schedule. And, right. So I think I like the doubleheader. And I've liked the doubleheaders. We ended up with all doubleheaders in the playoffs this year because that Steelers game, the Steelers-Bills game, got moved to Monday. So we've had...
Yep.
We had three doubleheaders last week. We had two doubleheaders just this past weekend, and then we'll have one doubleheader here. So I think it's worked out well, and I wonder if, too, the, you know, obviously the Super Bowl is a huge success, but maybe they've just heard good things about having the Super Bowl at 6:30, and they're like, why don't we just put all of our, you know, we're not dealing with the 4 o'clock window, so why not just make all these Sundays 6:30? People seem to like it, and it doesn't affect the West Coast people watching either, mm-hmm. So let's just do it. And yes, it is a great decision by them.
If anything, it's better for the West Coast people because they get to do it at 3:30 and then have their evening.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, you're talking noon and 3:30? Yeah.
I'd be okay if they did a Saturday and a Sunday. They just picked one.
I'm willing to hear the argument, Reese.
Because it wouldn't make you so dependent. I mean, then that's what the NFL wants, is you dependent on them for one of your days of the week. And I think it would be just a nice break. If you commit three on a Saturday, you commit three on a Sunday, and because you're going to be watching. You'll watch the conference championships. Yeah. Doesn't matter when, doesn't matter where they want to put them. But from a, I don't want to say, because this past Saturday was enjoyable, but boy, at the end of it, you're feeling pretty tired because you watch Ohio State and Iowa, and then that moves into Tampa, Detroit, and then that moves in to Seattle or Kansas City, Buffalo.
Yeah,
that was Sunday. That's just like, man.
Well, we had the similar on Saturday too, from our perspective, right? Because you had the Buckeyes at noon, and then you had Penn State, and then you had Baltimore and the Texans, and then, so it's like eight. You look at that and you go, God, this is daunting trying to take all of this in.
Now, what would you rather have? The schedule the NFL has now, where both championship games are on a Sunday, and I don't understand, if it's going to be this close, why college football doesn't just say, okay, we'll play the championship on that Saturday.
Then. Of course.
Just play it on that Saturday. That's a perfect idea. But would you rather have it than both NFL games on Sunday, or would you rather do college football national championship in primetime and like a 3 o'clock AFC championship before it?
So you just, no. You just hit it. This is what this should be like. And next year, I think the national championship game is January 20th. It's a Monday, which is stupid.
Just put it this weekend.
Just put it on Saturday. Like, this would be, you do the college football national championship game at 6:30 on Saturday night, and then Sunday is NFL championship Sunday.
That's,
if you
want to
stay
weekend
in this calendar, like, stay in this calendar, which they won't. Like, this, the college football calendar is all going to back up because you can't be playing Thursday and Friday night playoff.
What's the
games.
Point of
it's
that?
It's just the stupidest thing ever. So you're not, that's not what this is going to look like long term. You've got to get back to owning Saturdays and getting back to playing on Saturdays. And if you want to lead into NFL playoff games, I mean, you want to do the college football national championship game at play it at noon, play it at 3:30, and then lead into an NFL game at an NFL playoff game at 8. Fine, perfect, whatever. Doesn't matter. But yes, you landed on the perfect solution. If you're going to stay in this calendar, then the national championship game should be this Saturday, and the NFL championship games should be Sunday. Like, that's the marriage that makes all the sense in the world. And I think it's going to take, in order for this to happen, you need to have a real conversation with the NFL. And I think the NFL, it's just, they're Gordon Gekko. It's just greed is good. They want all of them do. Like, the college does too. But there is a marriage.
A symbiotic relationship between the two.
For sure. Yes. It is. There's no question. And so both benefit from the association with the other. And the idea that there couldn't be just some common sense, hey, give us these Saturdays. Don't play regular season Saturdays in December so that we can play our playoff. And give us the Saturday, even if it was 2 weeks off or 10 days off for the national championship game, like, play the semifinals. If you want to keep it in this January 20th window and match it up with NFL championship weekend, play the semifinals around New Year's Day, New Year's Eve, give them 2 weeks off and then play the championship game. Like, every coach would want that after the gauntlet of 12 games, a college, you know, a conference championship game, three games to get to the final. Every coach would want some rest,
and you'd actually
everybody
get,
would want
you'd
that.
Actually get to build it up instead of all of a sudden there's bang bang four games of the NFL, and then oh yeah, Monday night the college football national championship, which we weren't talking about all weekend because the divisional round of the NFL was going on. But if it was before the NFL games on Saturday, it would at least get a lot of the stuff Saturday and the stuff leading into it. It would mix in with the NFL, but that weekend during divisional round, I don't think it's going to get the coverage that they would want anyways.
Is this, so next year, will it be divisional round or conference championship round the Monday after?
I think it'll be divisional.
It's the 20th. It's January 20th, but I don't know. So are conference championships like the 26th or the conference championships the 19th in the NFL next year? That would be the question. Are you either way?
Next year, conference is January 25th.
All right. So they're going to go before. So they're going to go, you're going to go divisional round. You're going to come out of what we just came out of. So you're going to come out of four games. You're going to come out of that. And then that Monday, you're going to play a national championship game.
Yeah. And those are tentative numbers, but it seems like that's what they're going for, is that last weekend of January is going to be championship round. And then the Super Bowl is the second-ish weekend of February. That seems to be, this is off of Wikipedia, and it says tentative for those 25 to 26 weeks. But yeah, that would be it. And like, okay, so you're telling me we can't push the college championship five more days and have it on a Saturday, which is easier for travel, not just for fans, but for the teams anyways. They're used to doing that, traveling for a Saturday game.
If you still want to have the facade of the students, now they're traveling on Friday.
Right.
They're not
playing until 12:30 on Monday.
Yeah, no, and then flying back and press conferences on Tuesday. Yeah, I mean, there's some common sense things that can do with the calendar. And these two entities together, the NFL and college football, they're the only two that continue to be rocket ships from a rating standpoint. You're all consuming them more and more every single year. They're impervious to all of the other things. They're impervious to streamers, to social media. They are just absolute rocket ships, both of them. And they just need to have dialogue. When you have somebody like Ted Carter, you had somebody like Ross Bjork, who are going to be part of the future of the Ohio State program, and then byproduct of that, Tony Petitti at the head of the Big Ten, those conversations need to be had about a calendar that makes sense for the fan and a calendar that allows for the NFL and college football to continue to both grow in the way that they have. And that needs to happen. And there's plenty of money for everybody. It's just common sense stuff, Reese.
It's like they should have a conversation, but rarely is that the case with the NFL. Tells you, and you work around the NFL.
Well, and who in college football has that conversation? I guess the CFP?
No, it'd be Petitti and it would be Sankey.
Yeah.
I think college football has more leverage than they realize.
They're the second most popular sport in the country by a wide margin.
They just have to realize it.
And they just need to be organized.
Like what? Right. And that to...
They have to be organized, and they have to...
Ross Bjork's comments last week, I mean, this is just towards NIL and the NCAA, but you could even take that bigger picture and say everybody's got to get on the same page for a movement that's equally as important in figuring out your football calendar, because your football is your revenue driver. And so that's probably going to be not only conference commissioners, but the schools and the athletic directors that represent.
Yeah. The NFL knows that they draft superstars. They don't draft like the NBA does. Kids who you don't never heard. Go look at an NBA mock draft for next year. You've never heard of the top 10.
It's not Marvin Harrison Jr., who we've been watching for 2 years.
Yeah. Who Marvin Harrison Jr. is. You know who Caleb Williams is. You know who Bryce Young is, CJ Stroud. You're getting stars. And for that, there's going to be a small cost to you to get that. And that is just giving up a couple of Saturdays. And the NFL has proven it can rate on a Friday, it can rate on Monday, it can rate anywhere it wants to rate. Just give college football the Saturdays in December, and I feel like every box would be a wild night in the association. I do think a borderline must win for the Buckeye basketball team. They need to win on the road at some point. A good one opportunity tonight to do so out in Lincoln. We will get into all of that coming up next. Fishman First right here on The Fan.
Winners of the prestigious Platinum Microphone Award every year, given to the best radio station in the world. No need to look it up. It's real. The Fan. Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hey guys, it's Chaps, and A couple weeks ago, I recognized that I had made a difference. Now, I didn't save anybody's life, but I changed somebody's life because I saw Austin Ward reach his goal of dropping 50 pounds thanks to Awaken 180 weight loss. Now, just a week into it, I'm seeing Scotty Vegas drop the pounds, and it's really good to see helping steward people along, making that difference in their life by introducing them to Awaken 180, and I'd like that to happen for all of you, too. So if you have any questions, you can always hit me up on social media, DM me. I'm happy to answer them because Awaken 180 truly works. I am a testament to that. So call Awaken 180 at 844-346-1800. That's 844-346-1800. Or schedule your consultation online at awaken180weightloss.com. Maybe you'll lose 90 pounds like I did. Bishop and Friends, we're sponsored by Awaken 180. Fast, sustainable weight loss without medications. The solution for weight loss, Awaken 180 weight loss.
This was something last night, one of those instances where you're... If not for social, I got done with basketball practice and then I was just seeing what was going on in the world. I hop on the Twitter and see what's going on. And I hear like the Embiid point numbers start to stack. And I'm like, I got to see if that's somewhere. And then at the same time, Karl-Anthony Towns' points numbers. Karl-Anthony Towns had 44 at half yesterday for Minnesota. 44. Like that's heady stuff. Like that's okay. Now 80's in play. If you stack 44 and a half, 80's in play for sure. Embiid ends up with 70. He did something that not even Wilt ever did. He broke the franchise record of the Philadelphia 76ers. He had 70 and 15 rebounds in this game and was something that Wilt never, or 18. He had 70 and 18 rebounds in the game, which is crazy to be able to do that. Anthony Towns' team ends up losing. They lose to the Hornets, who suck. Charlotte erased an 18-point deficit and actually won the game despite him scoring 62. He went just 2 of 10 shooting in the fourth, and the Timberwolves are outscored 36-18. Did you guys hear from the coach, Chris Finch? He was not pleased.
No, he was calling him immature and saying that we need to go out there and close this games, and they were looking for Cat, you know, to try to keep the scoring going instead of looking for the best play. Not a happy camper, and he shouldn't be. What's the point of scoring 65 if you only score 4 in the fourth and then lose to one of the worst teams in the NBA when you are one of the best teams in the NBA, the number one seed right now in the West in the Timberwolves?
Yeah, talking about disrespecting the game.
Well, obviously, we're going to try to feed a hot hand, look for a hot hand, but at some point, we got to get back to making the right play. We got to get back to doing the right things. You know, that's just, like I said, there's a lot of ways to be immature. There's always a lot of ways to be immature. And there was a lot of immature performances here throughout the roster. We totally disrespected the game, ourselves, and we got exactly what we deserve. So,
Chris, did you also see, I mean, did it turn into Carl trying to hunt like a big number?
And yeah, I mean, it was, I mean, but for a while, I mean, it was going, but you know, down the stretch, we kind of dried up for us, but yeah, so.
Would you guys have known, because as I was saying this, and I had read that this was a Sixers, that's the Anthony Towns stuff from Chris Finch last night. They're the number one seed in the West, like just brutal to lose to Charlotte, who sucks. But did you, when I saw that the Embiid number happened and that it broke a Sixers record, I thought, well, that can't be. Wilt scored 100 playing for Philly. He scored 100 points in Hershey, Pennsylvania. We've all seen the picture 1,000 times, but that was the Philadelphia Warriors. It was not the Philadelphia 76ers, which I did not have.
I knew it was the Warriors.
That's crazy I didn't realize it was
the Philadelphia Warriors. Because
it happened in Hershey. It was in Hershey, PA, where the game happened.
Supposedly happened. There's no footage.
Yeah, allegedly. There's no proof of it, but he scored 100. It was the Philadelphia Warriors over the I think it was the Knicks. Let me see who it is here in this game. Yeah, he scored 100. I know the game's in Hershey because you've seen that 1,000 times. He did it against the 169-147 win against the Knicks at Hershey Sports Park, the Philadelphia Warriors. So then he ended up, did he go from there to the Lakers? No, he went from there to the Sixers. Okay, so I knew he played for the Sixers too. So he plays for the Philadelphia Warriors. Then he stays in Philly. The franchise moves to San Francisco. He stays in Philly and plays for the 76ers, and then eventually is traded to the Lakers for the 68 season. I knew none of that. I assumed that he always played for the 76ers. I had no idea that he played from somebody else. So they were they were two Philly teams. Oh, no. Here you go. It was the Syracuse Nationals became the Philadelphia 76ers in 63. So what a... I'm telling you, what was that movie that Will Ferrell did with Jackie
Semi-pro?
Moon? Semi-pro. there's a lot to that, how chaotic professional basketball was in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and honestly, early 80s.
Because that movie's about that. It's about the merger a little bit at the end, because the Hot Coffee, played by Andre 3000, he ends up on the Spurs at the end of the movie because they're going to the NBA, and the Flint Tropics, unfortunately, are being left behind.
And there were two brothers who worked out a deal to get future rights of NBA broadcasts as part of their...
We've read up on that before on this show, that you mentioned
crazy,
that.
Crazy.
I would not have had the Warriors, at least name-wise, and really even is at least tied with the Philadelphia 76ers.
No, me either. I just assumed that
the Warriors seemed like a much newer franchise to me.
Yeah. No, that was the way it went. You got Buckeye basketball tonight. You're at Nebraska. Nebraska's pretty good. They're 4-4 in the league, 14-5 overall. Ohio State 3-4 in the league. Have not run it. What's it been like? I saw Scotty Vegas in the
12, I think.
He said in the action update, was it like 380 some days since they won a road game?
Oh, it's been a full, January 1st of 2023.
Yeah.
At Northwestern.
Can't no time like the present. No time like the present.
Nebraska's kind of, they didn't have frisky. A great week last week, but 2 weeks ago they beat number one Purdue by 16. So they're kind of up and down, but frisky's a good word.
Well, they're 11-1 at home. They're unbeaten in Lincoln in conference play. So something ends tonight.
Either the Buckeyes road losing streak or their home. Mm-hmm. They're not quite a streak. It's 11-1, but a very good record.
Yeah. I think they're going to have to find some other place to get offense. Because right now, and this has been this way for a month, it's been Bruce, go, Roddy, go, and there's just not much beyond that. There's nothing dynamic outside. And those two, I don't know that even describes them. Like, they got to find something. I don't know if it's Middleton who's coming off the suspension. I don't think Royal's probably all the way ready for it, but they've got to find somebody else they can lean on offensively, because it dries up in a hurry when the threes aren't falling.
Yeah, and Akpar has become really good defensively, and I think he's actually going to be able to hold his own against some of the bigs in the Big Ten as the season goes along, but he's still pretty raw offensively. And you can't count on 12 points from Evan Mahaffey every night, which is what they did against Penn State.
Battle's not going to hit five threes. No. I mean,
but that's the only... Battle's three-point shooting is the only thing to me right now on this team that I see that's even approaching game-changing level. I don't think there's a game-changer on the roster right now. I wouldn't have confidence picking one out. Maybe one of these guys can turn into that, but that's not what I'm seeing watching them at the beginning of this Big Ten play.
No, it's the team that we thought we were getting in November, it just hasn't gotten there. It hasn't. I mean, you think about that win against Alabama, like they're a long ways, obviously, from that. Second hour of the program up next. We start it with The Real Truth. Bishman Friends right here on The Fan.
Here's a listener tweet. Can I tase Common Man in the nuts? Fine by us, but he may like it. Common Man and T-Bone.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
Not interested in Iowa football? Too bad. Shops will tell you about it anyway. This is Bishop and Friends.
You know, there's a lot of dummies out there that say, oh, they keep showing Taylor Swift. No one's going to watch. No one's going to watch. They keep showing her. I'm not watching the NFL anymore. They keep showing her. I'm not going to watch it. I'm sick of it. I don't want to see it. It came here for my football. You're all liars.
Every year there's something that people say they're not going to watch the NFL.
This is the numbers for Sunday. Okay? Chiefs Bills. Going to interest you in 50.3 million viewers. 50.3 million. The most watched divisional playoff game ever. Ever. Full stop. There's nothing stopping it.
Yeah.
It's a rocket ship. It's a Clydesdale. It is heads down, straight up, more and more and more and more and more. And we all love it and you all watch it. It's just part of the NFL has become such a part of the fabric of this country. It's what you do socially, it's what you talk about. It's the football in general is the one common kind of language throughout the country with all the other stuff that's going on. You can always kind of agree on that football's great. 50.3, with the amount of things that are on, the amount of things you could choose from, the amount of distractions that are out there, more people watch that divisional playoff game than any divisional playoff game ever, full stop.
And the NFL likes to boast their own numbers, for sure. Why wouldn't they? Look at how impressive they are. And they're coming off one of their, on paper at least, and they're still number one. There's nobody that would have come close to, you know, taking number one or even really the top 10 from them. But they didn't have to deal in the calendar year 2023 with any CFP games, because they were on the 31st the year before and they were on the first in 2024. Yeah. So the NFL dominated the charts for most watched programming for 2023. And then here we are continuing into 2024. It's not slowing down anytime soon, regardless of how many times they show Taylor Swift on CBS.
If anything, she's a driver.
Yeah, she's probably bringing in more people who aren't normally watching.
I mean, if you got a Chiefs game, you're likely going to see Taylor Swift. Or if you're channel surfing, or if you happen to be looking up from your phone and football just happens to be on and she's there, you're going to wonder, what the heck is that? You know, they're in Baltimore Sunday. She's likely going to be there. They make the Super Bowl. She's likely in Vegas. Yeah. Like, those are going to be drivers for people to see Taylor Swift.
You know, it was a funny thing about Taylor Swift and all her fans and possibly watching football, or at least watching it closely, maybe for the first time, really paying attention. Apparently, the Taylor Swift subreddit was not understanding what was going on when the fumble went through the end zone.
That doesn't make sense.
They had no idea.
Same. I agree.
I know the rule, but you're right.
I think it's stupid, too. I agree with them.
If you don't know the rule at all, you're like, wait, how did the Bills get the ball?
It feels like the easiest way to stop that would be that if the fumble goes out of the end zone and it's not recovered by anybody, the ball goes back to where the fumble occurred. That would stop it. It's so punitive. So should it be punitive in some way?
Because that's not punitive in any way. Should you be taught to be more careful with the ball?
Sure, a fumble has as equal chance of being recovered by the offense or the defense, right? Anybody could recover it. So if the defense has a chance to recover it still, you're not taking away the chance to recover it.
Yeah.
Right?
I wonder what the number
is. So it's kind of like a dropped interception. Like, should it be more punitive if you throw a ball at a linebacker and he drops it versus if he catches it? You know what I mean? Like,
I'm assuming the opportunity's close to 50-50, but I'm wondering what the numbers are for fumbles.
I would imagine
like 53% offense.
Yeah, I would think defense would probably recover slightly more than offense.
You think they recover more? I think offense
slightly.
Well, think about all the ones that get called fumbles, like in the backfield. That's a fumble.
Yeah,
the offense gets like all of those.
Get the MIT kids on it. You need some real research. Let's hit the real truth.
One second.
Bishop and Friends present The Real Truth.
All right, guys. First one here on a Tuesday. Julian Sain and Air Nolan will both be Buckeyes in fall camp. Is that the real truth?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that will, as long as it's fall camp. Will they both stay out of the portal in May? Yes. Will they both stay out of the portal in December? No. I think at that point you're going to have a pecking order. But I do think that both of them will be there in fall camp. I do not think all five of those quarterbacks are going to be there in fall camp. So whether that's Devin Brown and burning the boats or Lincoln Kienholz, one of those two or potentially both of those two will find a new home in May, because you can't coach up five guys and you can't have that much of 85 dedicated to one position. That one guy plays. So, no, I think there's no scenario where all five are there, but I think those two will both be there in fall camp.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the most likely outcome. Not only the two there, but probably the two gone is probably more likely than one staying in Kienholz and Devin Brown after spring. I could see that being the issue for them to deal with, and then they'd still have three quarterbacks, but you'd be in that situation where you're one quarterback away, for one injury away, one play away from a freshman leading the Ohio State team. But yeah, I was reading the Skull Session today on 11 Warriors, and the Chase Brown, he writes that, and he was talking about how, like, hey, the way he sees it, probably Howard as a starting QB. That's something he mentioned this too, that should be stated in probably even spring, in fall camp. Do not play around like we are in a quarterback competition. Just Stop say it. Will Howard is the starting quarterback at Ohio State. That's why we brought him here this year. But then, yeah, I think those two guys make it through spring and are still battling it out as freshmen, and they'll figure it out throughout the season. Then you've got, Tavian St. Clair. He's coming in from Bell Fountain. I mean, he's committed right now. We'll see. He's one of the, you know, he reaffirmed his commitment, but we've seen that before, so I don't know what to do with that. But presumably a quarterback will be in the 2025 class. Then you'd have three, and then they'd probably go for what they did with like Tristan Jebbia this year, talking about 2025, bring in another guy. And so then you'd have three. Well, you'd have two and then another guy, because Will Howard will be gone.
You almost Pepe Sylvia bit me.
It's a lot of names, a lot of movement. Yeah.
Charlie, all these people are real and they all want their mail.
The point is, real truth, Air Nolan and Julian Sain will be in fall camp on the Buckeye roster.
I'd even extrapolate that to next spring, like heading into the 2025 season. I think you could see both of them.
A win.
I think you'd see both of them. Now, after that season, that'll be the real question. But yeah, they'll still be here.
That would be what you just outlined there would be the biggest win Ryan Day could have at the position. If they both stuck.
And to actually get the competition.
To get a true competition in the spring next year. Of 25, yeah. That would be the biggest win he could have.
Do you guys think, I don't see any way that both of them make it through a second spring transfer portal window opening.
No. Nope.
The 24 Ohio State defense is better than the 24 Ohio State offense. Is that the real truth?
Well, they're both great. It's the most talented roster in college football, but I do think it's the real truth. I think the Caleb Downs, you know, the Julian Sand thing happening on Sunday officially and kind of getting word of it on Saturday was got so much attention. We talk about number one player in the country, but Julian Sand, barring catastrophic injury, he's not playing next year. Right, he might come, you know, him and Aaron Nolan, they'll come in, they'll play mop up duty, maybe keep him under the four, so theoretically you could redshirt. But Caleb Downs is a dude, and he's a game wrecker on the back end of the defense. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Downs going into the safety room allows for Sonny Styles to move up. There isn't a hole on this defense. Cody Simon played a ton of linebacker. CJ Hicks has been waiting for a long time to play. Threes is overseeing that room. Hopefully that becomes official and a paid gig in short order. It needs to be done. But the defensive line's back. The corners are back. Like, I think this is on a short list of most talented returning defenses in a long time. And while the offense is great, you know, we haven't seen Will Howard play with this type of talent before. So I like him, but I'm not sure that is Will Howard as good at the quarterback position as Caleb Downs is at safety? Probably not. So when you think about it from that perspective, to me, I think this is the real truth. I think the defense is more talented.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the defense was the better unit in 2023 than the offense was. And now the offense, while it is exciting, all the players that they have kept and brought in a few as well, and I think they'll shore up the offensive line a lot more. It's the question marks around Will Howard and his acclimation to that side of the ball. And will it be great? If it is great, then awesome. But we don't know that for sure. And you're also losing Marvin Harrison Jr., whereas on the defensive side of the ball, yeah, you're losing Tommy Eichenberg, but I feel good about what you laid out with the possibilities for the linebacker situation. And then everywhere else, basically everybody's back. You lost Josh Proctor, but you replaced him with Caleb Downs, who inarguably is a better recruit and going into his second year, so yeah, he's a real stud.
Josh is really nice, but Caleb Downs is a stud.
Yes, and so I believe the defense, not only will the defense be the better unit, the defense should be the number one defense in the country, especially with that offense giving them run support on the other side.
It is the real truth, and I'll just say it's easy to say that now because next year for the Ohio State offense, you'll have a quarterback that started at Kansas State, a center that started at Alabama, and a 1A, a 1B running back that started at Ole Miss in 2023. So to merge and mesh all of those together to be equally or more dominant than a defense that has everybody back from a defense last year outside of a couple players, and then you add one of the better defensive players in the country, right now, yes, absolute real truth.
Yeah, probably a lot easier to drop in a free safety than it is a center on the offensive side of the ball and say, go.
Don't say drops.
Yeah.
CJ Stroud will win a Super Bowl in Houston. Is that the real truth?
It's so hard to project. The safe bet here would be no, because it's really hard. It's really hard to do it. A lot of really great players knock on the door over and over again and don't ever bust through. What you're banking on is, you're banking on, can Houston stack the roster for him? Because they have landed a franchise quarterback. And you're seeing this at the highest level in Kansas City right now, where this is the second incarnation of the Chiefs with Mahomes. They had the first one where they won a Super Bowl, the Tyreek Hill, Kelsey, Mahomes run, Honey Badger, all that. Now, some of those guys have been purged off. Mahomes is still there. You're at the twilight of Kelsey, and they won a Super Bowl last year in the transition. There will be a post-Kelsey Mahomes run, too, in Kansas City. So do you trust the people running the Texans to continue to give CJ at bats? I'm gonna roll the dice. I'm gonna say yes, he will win one, but the smart play here would be no, just because of how brutal the AFC is. Yeah. I mean, Josh Allen hasn't even played in a Super Bowl.
He's only been to one AFC championship.
That's it. So like you have him to contend with, you have Burrow to contend with. Herbert's gonna be more competently coached going forward. Like, it's just brutal out there in the AFC.
Plus, I mean, we were just talking about Callahan. Do the Titans become something that is, you know, a really good team? They've had seasons, and then
we didn't talk about Lawrence.
Can Lawrence figure it out? So even in their own division, yeah, they won the division this year, but that's kind of from an implosion of the Jaguars. Can they even count on that? I like everything he said. It's really hard to decide if somebody is going to win a Super Bowl. But I will say that from draft time to especially now, I can change that will to can. And I will say that's the real truth. C.J. Stroud can win a Super Bowl in Houston. And when he was first drafted, I probably would have said no to that.
Yeah.
That I didn't have enough confidence in Houston as an organization to get that and make it all work. Plus, we, you know, the doubts that we had been so high on Buckeye quarterbacks coming out. And that doubt creeped in a little bit, for sure. But he proved that wrong, and he looks great. So they definitely can win. Will they? I don't know. It's the NFL.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say right now, it's not the real truth. I think that they'll have plenty of bites at the playoff apple. They'll be in the mix a lot. But you see how hard it is to get in comparative to how it is to get on top. And I don't trust the Texans to put enough around him to get over that hump.
Yeah.
Like, that's the biggest thing. It isn't anything really, in my opinion, to do with Stroud. It's everybody else the Texans will or will not put around him that'll make it the difference between a Texans team that can make the playoffs year after year after year and a Texans team that can advance past the AFC Championship game and into that Super Bowl. Because you talk about the division that they've got. You're not sure what Indianapolis is going to be, but there's also Jacksonville, and then Tennessee could wake up and find themselves. So that division should be tougher at the further we get into these next couple of seasons, making it, I think, less likely he does.
Your guys' last one, melting snow is the second most annoying type of snow, second to falling snow. I think it's the most annoying type, not the real truth. Melting snow is worse than falling.
Yeah,
falling,
that's the real truth. Your statement's the real truth.
Well,
snow, I'm fine with. It's pretty, I'm totally cool with it.
Melting the thing I hate about falling snow is when you shovel it, and then 2 hours later, it needs to be shoveled again. But yeah, melting snow.
You gotta get that blower I told you about, Chops. That blower, that jet-powered blower. Like, I didn't have to shovel anything. I just would blow it, like, every 2 hours. It would go away.
I was able, with, like, a second little dusting Friday night, to blow that away. But if it gets anywhere above an inch, my blower doesn't do it. Yeah, you just gotta
go a couple of times. But, like, this, yeah, that blower I was telling you about last week, that thing smokes it.
This weather is worse than 8 degrees and sunny that we 100%. Had last week that everybody was complaining about. This is the worst type of weather. 40 and rainy, terrible.
Yeah, there's a Cormac McCarthy book called The Road, which is like an apocalypse book. And every time we have this is what I think. Like, no sun, ash falling from the sky, just gray, gross, white, awful, the worst. Andrew Berry, yesterday, the Browns general manager, he talked for a long time. I think the most interesting thing he discussed was the quarterback situation. We will get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
This promo is brought to you by Common Man and Timmy Hall's ping pong game. The Fan. Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And gear up with a typical sports book. Get on the betting action, kids. The playoff football, the basketball, hockey, so much more. So much fun. Take advantage of those massive odds boosts they're giving you on your favorite teams and players for the biggest payouts. And try out that new Flex Parlay. Cash in on your bets, even if you miss a leg or two of that parlay. Claim your new sign-up bonus now. Get $100 in bonus bets when you bet just $25. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100. Get a $100 bonus bet. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions do apply. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER for more on that. Browns general manager Andrew Berry addressed the assembled media up in Cleveland yesterday. It's an interesting offseason for them, because the magic of December and the way that the season ended was something that was incredibly fun, but also a bit of a band-aid on now kind of the issues that happened at the start of the season, which was, again, you do not get a full season out of Deshaun Watson. This is of no fault of his own. This is an injury. It is what it is. Made the point here that the offense that Kevin Stefanski called for Joe Flacco was the best the offense has looked since Kevin Stefanski has been the coordinator, since been the head coach in Cleveland. And they have two choices here. They either need Deshaun Watson to play comfortably with his back to the football field, back to the defense, in the play action game, so that they can run the same stuff they ran with Flacco with him and then add his ability to scramble, or they need to adjust the offense and they need to probably be more of a shotgun team, shotgun three wide team. That's it. There's two. There's no real middle ground because the goal when you signed Deshaun Watson was go win the Super Bowl because you have a roster in its prime that's really loaded. The Nick Chubb question hangs out there too. I would say they're probably not going to count on him until October, you know, if at all. So they've got major upgrades they got to do around the roster, but it'll start at quarterback. And the way Flacco played, the way that he galvanized the city, the franchise, the players, all of it, it checked every box. Barry yesterday spoke on Flacco and the huge hole that he filled on the roster.
He played winning football for us. He did a great job of coming in and really playing at a high level that allowed us to go on a run at the end of the year, play really good football in December. You know, even if maybe we ended a little bit with a thud against Houston, you know, in the wild card round. But, you know, really pleased with what Joe did on the field, pleased with who he was as a teammate.
Joe has said that he wants to see what the quarterback market will bear. He wants to see what's out there, but also has been incredibly complimentary of his time in Cleveland and that he would be open to coming back. Here's Andrew Berry to that question.
We'd absolutely love to have Joe back. He's a good, you know, good quarterback, and but I guess maybe a little bit similar to, you know, Jacoby last year. It really depends, right? Like I want to bring all of our, you know, our good players back, and you know, but you know, there are constraints to that. I'm really kind of both sides of the aisle, but would have no problem having Joe back.
He did. Do we have the one where he says that there would not be an issue? And then we said, you, sir, are a liar. That was happening as we were doing the show yesterday where he said that there would not be an issue with and you have to say that if you're the general manager. Reese, I think it was one of your three things yesterday. You mentioned it as something. Here's the deal with the Flacco part of it. If you bring Joe Flacco back, then you have to ask yourself the question, do we believe Deshaun Watson can handle that? And I'm not talking about the football part of it. I'm talking about the mental part of it. Can Deshaun Watson handle the first time he throws an interception in Cleveland Browns Stadium being booed and hearing chants of Flacco? Can he handle that? The only people who can answer that question, honestly, it's not even Deshaun Watson because he's not going to be honest about it.
No.
He's not going to say I'm vulnerable. He's not going to say I don't want that. He's going to say I can handle it. I'm the dude. Carries himself as the franchise quarterback, all of those things. The only people that can really know that are like Stefanski and Barry. They've been around Watson now for two full years. They know what he can handle mentally and what he can't. The money part of it is what Andrew is alluding to there, where he's talking about, you know, financially, can we pay him and pay the rest of the rooms? The odds are probably not. You need Flacco to play at the vet minimum, and even that's going to be big when you're of his caliber. But the bigger issue, honestly, is, do you think Watson mentally can handle it? That's the question they have to ask themselves.
Yeah, my answer for the real truth of that is no, I don't think Watson would handle it mentally. Yeah. He couldn't handle a preseason game down in Jacksonville. Now, that was his first time out. So, but I mean, remember when those boos came down? I don't think he handled that very well. And I think Andrew Berry sort of, you know, they almost never say anything up there, but I think he let the cat out of the bag a little bit. You're right. And I think this is why he's doing it, because he's talking about the cap reasons of why, we weren't able to keep Jacoby Brissett. But I think the real reason they didn't keep Jacoby Brissett is because they didn't want the questions of, well, wait, is Deshaun actually the best option of a quarterback on this roster? And because Jacoby played better than Deshaun 2 years ago, Flacco played better than Deshaun played for
the
Browns.
Super Bowl winner. Like, that's a whole nother.
Yeah. So like, no, I don't think they're going to be able to handle the people clamoring for Flacco. And I definitely don't think Deshaun Watson is going to take kindly to people clamoring for Flacco. Now, it could, if he did it and it went out there and Deshaun Watson actually played at like Texans level or even just a little bit better than Flacco last year, then it might just work itself out. But then there's no reason to be paying Flacco if he's never going to play. And I don't think it's going to be something that they're going to do.
A healthy Deshaun Watson has to be your best available option at quarterback for Deshaun Watson to succeed.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, this has to be we don't have anybody better at the quarterback position in the quarterback room on this roster, hell, in Berea or Cleveland or Northeast Ohio.
Yeah.
For Deshaun to succeed, because there can't be anybody, but there can't be any thought behind him of, well, this guy's coming from my... I mean, it'll be in the preseason. You re-sign Joe Flacco and Deshaun looks poorly in a preseason game, and it'll never get to a point where you have everybody on board with Deshaun Watson starting week one of the 2024 season.
I guess they'd luck out. They probably wouldn't have to play Flacco at all in the preseason. You know, just he's ready. He's Joe Flacco.
The presence would be
his presence would be
overwhelming.
Yep. And just like with Jacoby Brissett, I mean, it would just be too much.
It would be so much more because Jacoby Brissett didn't throw for 300 yards in four straight games. Like Jacoby Brissett doesn't have the ability that Flacco has. He's a fine backup quarterback. Flacco is a Super Bowl winning quarterback who can throw it to any point on the field. He's 38. It's true. The crazy thing is, I actually think if it could work, it would be perfect because I think Flacco could actually be an incredible mentor for Watson if Watson could handle it. And I think honestly, like they need to stop handling Deshaun with kid gloves anyway. He's going into year three. Like, treat him like the franchise quarterback that he is.
And you need to have
Flacco was front and center of everything.
He can't handle
for
that.
A month. Like, they got to just have him do that. It's time.
You need to have actual quarterbacks, too, behind him because look at what happened this year when he got injured.
Can't risk it.
You cannot go into next season. He hasn't played a full season in 3 years. There's no way with that roster that you're going to be able to go into next season and
PJ Walker and DTR and say, this is our plan.
Because the locker room is, you can't lie to the locker room. And who would you think of Deshaun Watson? Again, you'll never get the truth out of David Njoku, but you ask him week one in 2024 who you'd rather have quarterbacking.
It's
same with Amari Cooper.
Yeah, true. All right. Tuesdays with the Barry coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Chris Holdman Daily Show is brought to you locally on The Fan by Credit Union of Ohio.
Us.
Bishop and Friends present Tuesdays with Tabari.
Sponsored by Sears Heating and Cooling. Family owned since 1950.
Oh, hello, my friend. This is a little bit of a different Buckeye football program, isn't it, my man? They're throwing their weight around a little bit, throwing some cash around, getting some make movers and shakers. This is different than anything you've ever covered, I promise you. You and I both know that.
Well, Tim May and I talked about that the other day, that we've never seen a January like this. Obviously, NIL is very much alive, the transfer portal very much alive. And, you know, you look at the retention with the guys they were able to bring back. Obviously, NIL figured in big time on that. And then you look at the guys they're bringing in. You know, that now they've got a quarterback room. I mean, how's that going to shake out? Only one of them could play.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's I've never seen anything like this. And, but let me just say this. Can it continue at this rate going forward? I mean, I think what we witnessed the other day with Ross Bjork and what we witnessed with the new president is, you know, you and I often talk, well, Ohio State's always been a good citizen, always, you know, didn't throw their weight around, you know. But, I mean, I thought it was very interesting when Ross said, hey, football is king in Columbus. He didn't hide, you know what I'm saying?
No.
And I think Ohio State wants to get ahead of this NIL thing. I don't know where it's heading, but I don't think they're, you know, I think you got to figure something out where you're getting these kids, and every year you got to convince them to stay. You got to figure out what you got. I mean, at some point, you know, and I even asked the president, I said, are we witnessing the professionalism of college football? And he kind of said, we're on the brink of it. I think, you know, I mean, he didn't hide from it.
Good.
And I think that's where we're heading. I think Ohio State wants to help lead the way as far as where this NIL world's going. But, you know, I think we are, and you and I've said it from day one, we're witnessing the professionalism of college football. And I don't know, are contracts far away? Are, you know, you got to have some kind of assurance that, you know, if you're going to give these kids that kind of money, they're going to be around 3 years at least.
Well, that's the big, right? And that's the only thing that'll stop it in the interim until there's actual legislation is you and I both know this. You've been around a lot of successful people. They don't like to lose money, right? So let's take this kid, Julian Sayin, who, heck, use Caleb Downs, the safety, right? So everybody, everybody seems to, and everybody I talked to down there says this, that obviously Nick Saban, after they lost to Michigan, he had to re-recruit his own roster, because this is where we are in the sport right now, and then he had to make sure that those guys were taken care of from an NIL perspective. So then all of a sudden Saban leaves. All right, so Caleb Downs, he gets some from Alabama, right? And he got some at the end of the season, and that's kind of the way this thing works. Then Saban leaves, and now Downs is a free agent again. And so now he's double dipping. He got an NIL from Bama a month ago. Now he's getting an NIL here. So he's double dipping. And so who's going to be upset with that? The people who went into their pockets at Alabama. And those are the most powerful people around a program. And the same thing will happen here. If one of these kids hops into the portal next December, and you were a guy who scratched out a big check, big six figures, maybe even a seven figures check to make it happen, how happy are you with that?
Well, you're not, but that's the problem, because there's no assurance that they can't do that. That's why I think you're eventually going to see, and the whole model, I mean, you know, you can't compare this. You know, basketball maybe on a smaller level, but it does, you know, and the majority, and don't forget, the majority of Division I football programs lose money, Bo.
Yeah.
The Ohio States, the Michigans, the Alabamas, you know, those are the elite teams. And, yeah, they're heading, you know, you see what the SEC and the Big Ten's doing, and that will continue to grow. But I do believe, you know, have we reached super conference levels? Yes.
Yeah.
Is it going to get bigger? Yes. Does it get tighter? Yes. But I think that's where we're heading.
I think we're there. And I think Bjork said that last week, right? I was so impressed with him, impressed with Ted Carter. This is very different tone than the previous, certainly from a presidential. We've never had a president at Ohio State talk the way Ted Carter talks, and or at least not in my time here since 07. And even from an athletic director standpoint, Bjork acknowledging things. And look, I understand this isn't a shot at Gene, because like Gene has done a tremendous job, but at the same time, like, he did a job in what is now a different era of college athletics.
Right.
And Bjork is going to take it to what this is going to look like going forward. You've been around here a long time. What was it? What were those press conferences like? You mentioned talking to Carter about we're headed to the professionalization. We've never had anybody at Ohio State talk like this, Dom.
No. I mean, I go back to, you know, when you would hear, we'll never be the farm system for the National Football League.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what it's been. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the thing. And, you know, in this world of NIL, Bo, where, you know, now, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. And, you know, as much as you hear coaches and people say, we got to get this under control. I don't know how you get there now, but, you know, if you're the only show in town, you'll get there. You'll figure a way to get it done. But they, you know, you got to get people to agree. But the bottom line is this: the National Football League has never paid a nickel for their farm system. Think
about
it. And
they never will. They never will.
Well, if you know, they should, because here's the bottom line: these colleges go out there, they get these kids, make them household names. The NFL drafts like nothing else. I mean, you don't know the guys, the hockey's drafted or baseball or whatever. You know who these NFL players are because they're household names. Mm-hmm. The NFL comes in, they watch the film, they watch the practices, and then they take the college players 3 years in, and they've got no money in a minor league system. They're the only professional league that doesn't have a minor league system. It's crazy.
It is. And I know where you're going with it. I think the tricky part, though, is the colleges, like I've said this before, and sometimes people get upset with it. Ohio State's athletic department, it's not good business. You don't need 36 sports, right? You don't need football subsidizing all of this stuff, right? You're choosing to do it because you like the look of it. But even a place like Texas has around 20. Like, you don't need 36 sports. You're trying to be Stanford, you know, in an athletic department while being Alabama or Texas in football. And it just doesn't make business sense. So that's what the NFL is going to say is like, look, you guys are getting $90 million of school from your television deal. What do you need our money for? You don't need to subsidize 18 programs. That's going to be their pushback.
Well, and I understand that, and that is why I wonder if the NCAA and if college football becomes, you know, the something separate from
yes.
what the universities
now you're
are
on.
Managing.
Yep. I agree.
And they're football's something separate out of there. It's not part of it. Then what happens with the gender equity with programs like Ohio State that created yeah. all these women's sports for Title IX? I think it was very interesting. In my mind, Ross Bjork's going to have to deal with the budget.
Yeah.
I mean, because they got to figure, because with the NIL and with what they're trying to do, which is what I thought was really amazing when he came right out and said, football's king here.
Yeah.
You're going to have to figure that out because they do have it. And I love all the sports. We cover them all. I think it's great. You know, I think it's great. Ohio State has a women's hockey team that won the national title. Mm-hmm. They excel at all that. But, you know, that's an expensive sport to fund. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got all that to figure. But the NFL, when I realized what their whole mission was, is when Maurice Clarett challenged.
Yeah.
Won his right to play in the NFL after 1 year, and then it was the NFL that appealed it.
Sure.
They appealed it.
Of
they
course.
Did not want
no.
their farm system. They don't want to pay for their
and
farm.
And guess where they saw that appeal? The Southern District of
and
New
guess
York.
What? What is the
where they
most,
all got their money.
What league makes the most money? You
yeah.
know what it is. And
oh,
they don't pay a nickel for their farm system. I think
no.
that's ridiculous.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Good chat as always. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, buddy. I'll see you.
All right. That's Dom DeBerry, Channel 10 on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Little Tuesdays with DeBerry, Thing or Not a Thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We know everything about you. We know you love the Buckeyes. We know you love the Jackets. We know you're wearing a red shirt. Just freak the hell out of someone. Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast. Or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Apex Plumbing Pros.
Jeremy Fowler, he shared this tweet Monday. Good chance the touchback rule for fumbling through the end zone will be changed this offseason. Momentum behind NFL correcting it. Penalty considered by many to be
yeah.
way too harsh. And I also found some information on the fumbles. This is from an article in the middle of the 2020 season from Sharp Football Analysis. But it said this year offenses have recovered 54.3% of fumbles, which is
wow.
in line with the about 53% rate across the sample of the past five seasons on a per fumble basis. Here's how each NFL team comes out. So then he goes into, you know, going into
so you
more
had
in
it.
Depth.
You said 53% offense. So you were,
I think
you
I
were
did.
Right on it.
So
you were right on it.
What I didn't factor in, but maybe I was in the back of my head. You offense recovers if one the player recovers it or it goes out of bounds or another off so they have
yeah,
three chances to recover it, whereas the defense is only a different player recovers the fumble.
Yeah. So this is a huge thing that this is happening. It's a smart thing, it's a no-brainer thing, it's a simple thing. And I think the rule ought to be that if you fumble it out of the end zone, the ball goes back to where you fumble it. Now, the pushback for that would be then as you're going down, you're just gonna reach for everything. But so what? So what if you reach? Like, you should reach for the pylon. You reach for the pylon and everything else. Why would? I don't understand why that has to be punitive.
What about
if you reach for it?
What about touchback for the fumbling team? Back to the 20.
Oh, that seems too punitive too.
You don't lose the ball though.
Yeah, but like you shouldn't. You're not going to lose. To your point that you just said, you recover 53% of the fumbles that you have anyway. Like to go back 80 yards is a incredible punishment for that. To me, the defense has its chance. The ball's on the ground. I don't think it's going to change the way offenses play. It's not like all of a sudden you're going to be throwing the football forward. The ball, you're not going to put the ball on the ground anyway. No one's going to fumble on purpose. So to me, I don't know. I just think it's simple to just do that and then it's done. The defense has its opportunity whether they get it or not.
Yeah, it's a thing, but it's also not really a thing because, Bo, you said it. Simple. Just make it simple, please, for everybody's sake.
You can't have what's happening.
No. It's
total. Not. It's so punitive. It's,
yeah.
The rule doesn't bother me as much. I'll put that on the record. It does not bother me as much as everybody else. I don't care about it. I'm not defending the rule, but it does not bother me the same way. I'm okay with it.
After missing the game-tying field goal Sunday night against the Chiefs, Bills kicker Tyler Bass reportedly deactivated all of his social media accounts. Thing or not a thing?
Yeah, it sucks. You know, it sucks. the amount of, I think we're going to look, you're going to look back and, you know, I got little boys now and I watch and see how, I mean, there's kids in the fourth grade who are like Beamsy's age who have phones and have like accounts. And it just seems crazy to me. NBC has one. He's in the sixth grade and, you know, all of them have them. The damage that is being done mentally by having that type of access to your brain all the time, the amount of, I don't even know how you calculate the damage. I mean, I feel bad for the kid. It just sucks. The thing sucks.
I believe it was Seth MacFarlane who I saw on a podcast, just a clip of it, you know, the creator of Family Guy.
Yeah.
And he was sitting there talking. He's like, can we just admit that social media was a mistake and a failure?
Yeah.
Like at this point, like, it's definitely a net negative on society, I would say, at this point. There are positives to it, for sure. But I think it's been a net negative, and this is a good example of that. And I would also, I think, you know, anybody could get better at it. Myself, but I would caution people, because I brought this up with the Bill O'Brien, like the initial reactions to the Bill O'Brien hire were all these negative things from people. And it's like, you know what? Take a breath. Think about something before you talk about somebody else. If it's just something that's an opinion about things, then okay, you can throw that out there. But if you're starting to actually like go after people, just sit on it for a little bit. And maybe you will still have that opinion. But I think sometimes just hold back and decide, do I really need to say this? Do I really even want to say this? Or am I just caught up in an emotional thing right now? Everybody could benefit from that. This from Adam Schefter on the Eagles, the team, not the band. GM Howie Roseman and head coach Nick Sirianni are holding an end-of-season press conference together on Wednesday. All signs continue to point to Sirianni returning for the 2024 season. While changes to the staff are expected, there isn't expected to be one at the top. Sirianni has averaged 12 wins per year in Philadelphia, and he helped lead the Eagles to last season's Super Bowl. Thing or not a thing?
So, yes, smart thing to do this. Howie Roseman's the most powerful guy in that organization, save for Jeffrey Lurie, the owner. I mean, he's in the Super Bowl game last year. They were 10-1. Like, let's not lose sight of all of the good. But they're a very good organization. They're very measured. So what this will be is Sirianni will get one chance to hire new court. He had one chance last year to hire because both his coordinators left.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to hire new coordinators. It didn't work. So now he's going to get a couple of more coaching changes. And then if it doesn't work again, then it's going to fall on his feet. And I think that's the right process for them.
Yeah, this is a good call by the front office of the Eagles. It would be kind of funny if Roseman just get that he fires him on the spot.
Like, is he like sitting
at
there?
The presser?
Right,
at the press conference.
You know, I changed my mind.
Changed my mind on this. You are fired, Nick. You can leave. I will the rest from here.
What if he does it like a recruit and there's like a Sirianni hat and a new head coach hat and he puts on the new head coach hat and says, sorry, no. Nick, get out of here.
Or he asks him like to solve this puzzle and he puts him on the clock. He's like, you can't do this in 30 seconds.
Gives him a challenge.
You are totally fired. Some Colts fans were in their feelings online yesterday after a picture of Peyton Manning was posted by his production company, Omaha Productions. It was looked like after season 3 of, what was it, Eli, the Manning cast, after it wrapped, the production company or the staffers gave Peyton one of those WWE replica belts from the Denver Broncos. And the Colts fans were like, what about the 14 years you were with us? What about a Colts belt?
Yeah.
Thing or not a thing?
I mean, it feeds into the worst of Midwestern insecurity, right? Like, Manning played 14 years in Indy. He built a dome. He's the best player in the history of the franchise. There's a statue of him outside of the facility. And where does he choose to live? Denver. Choose to live in Denver. And even when he was playing in Indy, the assumption was that he was going to move back to Nashville or Knoxville. Like, he was never going to live post-football in Indy. He was always going to move somewhere else. So it feeds into all of the insecurities that a great many people have in this part of the country of, boy, nobody wants to live there, right? So I think that's where it comes from. And it's hard, right? Because Manning, I mean, everything I said about him, you don't have Lucas Oil without him, all of that stuff. Like, he's beloved, but at the same time, like, he was great in Denver too. And the thing that's weird is the year they won the Super Bowl, he wasn't great. It was before that he was, when he was the MVP and set all the records. But I get it. I know where it comes from. We all do.
Yeah, and he ended his career there, and the Broncos were, because he ended his career there on a Super Bowl win, they were really able to kind of cultivate that relationship, and he's been in there. He did the video for their schedule release a year.
He lives in Denver.
Yeah, I mean, he's
like, he loves the West.
And Indy, you know, anybody could correct me on, like, if he's ever been back for some sort of halftime honoree. I'm sure he has. I don't know off the top of my head, but he's not around that organization the way he has been around the Broncos. It makes sense that it is his team. And then, Reese, when you quickly transitioned into just saying Manning cast, I was like, what actually is it called? Or did we just all start calling it Manningcast. And it looks like ESPN has started calling it Manningcast from this year. They had a schedule out and they called it Manningcast. But I think technically it was originally called Monday Night Football with Peyton and Eli. And everybody's just called it Manningcast and it's just railroaded the official naming of it.
Because I saw the logo in my head. It was like Peyton and Eli. And I'm like, no, just call it the Manningcast. Because to your point, our listeners probably don't know what the hell it's actually called. But Manningcast, yeah, it does sound better. I also looked, because I was just curious, for about $549, you can get a Bengals replica title belt or a Browns replica title belt. So I put it to a vote on our Twitter at 971BFS. Are these things hideous? And most respondents said yes.
Okay.
They are very ugly.
What, NFL fans? They've never worn hideous team gear to a game.
All the official NFL merch is just...
You want to know why Peyton Manning is... Why he's got a Broncos belt? Because he lives in, like, Cherry Creek, Colorado. So Google Cherry Creek, Colorado, and then Google, like, Carmel, Indiana, and you tell me which one you'd prefer. And that's why this has happened. If he didn't love Denver, then he wouldn't... They wouldn't... The association wouldn't be as strong. He's raising his family there. He loves it. We'll blitz the NFL coming up next. Fishman Friends right here on The Fan.
If you don't like listening to Morning Juice, Bobby Carpenter's Mad Nipples will punch you in the face.
For real.
You want to fight, do you?
Weekdays from 6 to 9.
The Fan. Drink recommendations, movie reviews, sports discussion, and whatever the hell Reeser does. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Tuesday edition. A little bit of Shelly time coming up at 11:33. Between now and then, we blitz the NFL. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present NFL Blitz.
All right, boys. Only four remain. I believe I had that, Reese. What did you have?
I didn't have much. I had Detroit minus 6.5. I was 2-2 thanks to the Chiefs' push. But,
there you go.
Oof, brutal.
Chiefs didn't push. They covered.
They covered.
It was three. Three,
yeah, plus three. They were underdogs.
That's a push, though, right?
No, it's plus three. No. They won by six.
Plus three. They won the game outright. You win.
Yes.
You were getting three.
I know. I think I had.
Are we just explaining to you how the plus and minus works
this
right now?
So much, Reese.
Wait, the Chiefs won 27-24,
and correct, they were plus
they
three.
Were plus three. They had to. That means they could have. You would have won the bet if Buffalo won by two.
Ah, damn.
So you win.
No, I lost.
So who did you have? Buffalo or Kansas City?
Yeah, Buffalo.
Oh, so you lost.
I lost.
What.
Damn. Yeah.
Lost no matter what.
Thanks for explaining gambling to me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We've only been doing it, you know, for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, sorry. So, yeah.
I believe I had that. Don't go against Mahomes, Andy Reid, and the Chiefs in the postseason. Their offense, while still not as good as it has been in years, looks better than it did all season long. Mahomes is playing spot on right now, and they're not even asking him to do everything for them. He didn't have to go out there and throw for 400 yards. They were still able to do it, getting Kelsey involved. Hey, oh, Kelsey, he's slowing down. He didn't get that 1,000-yard. His 1,000-yard streak ended. He sat out the last week. He's not the same guy. He's distracted with Taylor Swift. Nope. He's just ready for the playoffs because at this point in his career, he's already won two Super Bowls. He's got tons of regular season accolades. It's all he cares. Don't go against the Chiefs right now. Although, we'll see what I do Thursday.
I think it can be true that Kelsey's lost a step and also that they're just damn good and clutch when it needs to be. The thing I was most confident about this weekend was Baltimore. That number was one that just screamed everyone falling in love with C.J. Stroud, everyone falling in love with the story of Houston. Remember people talking, oh, it's been 3 weeks since Baltimore played. And they were sluggish in the first half, but they're really good, and they're locked in. And that was one that was – I went 2-2 last weekend, but that was one that to me I felt most confident about for sure, by far. What didn't you have last weekend, Reese?
I did not have the Ravens dominating the Texans like that in the second half. Whatever Lamar said worked.
It did.
Quite simply, I got the whole weekend right. I get a lot of
out of you.
I get a lot of things wrong, but not only against the number, my straight up picks, because I said I thought the Chiefs were going to win outright, even though they were underdogs, everything else. So I didn't have anything that stood out to me as I was wrong. The games went how I thought they were going to go all weekend long, which is a very rare thing to be able to say in general, but especially in the NFL. So I got it all right. That.
Look at me. I'm so great. I got it all right. I didn't even in making the Buffalo pick. I didn't have confidence in it. If you go back to our shows, as long as I've done this show at the beginning of the year when we pick Super Bowl winners, I always pick the Chiefs MVP. I always pick Mahomes. I never go against them. And even going against them last week, I didn't believe it as I was saying it. It just felt like at some point it had to stop, but it didn't. But what I got What I honestly got most wrong in terms of what I didn't have, just kind of big picture wise, was the growth of Green Bay. And this is more of a full season didn't have it. When we saw Jordan Love last year for Green Bay, he looked wildly incompetent. And even early on this season, there were times where he looked wildly incompetent. But he got better. Now, he's going to have to find a way to get over one of the worst interceptions you could ever throw to end a football game, and that could roll with him mentally for a while. But the player he turned into this season and the operation that they have is formidable. And the idea that they went Favre, Rodgers, this kid is a remarkable thing. And I did not have that they would be as competitive as they had. They really should have beat the 49ers. They really should have won the game and probably deserved to. So I didn't have Green Bay being that good this quickly. Player who impressed the most this weekend.
1-3 going into divisional round play, or I guess going into this postseason, and he had 4 touchdowns. It's pretty impressive, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson was who I wrote down because, I mean, he's definitely the MVP. That's pretty much been locked up. But to really sit down and get to watch one of his games, and it's crazy because it felt like he was dominating it. Even in the first half when it was closer, when it was 10-10 at halftime, it felt like, oh, he's the best player on the field for sure. He only ends up with 252 total yards, 100 rushing, 152 through the air, but there's 4 touchdowns within there. Not something you see from people too often, and it was a field game with him. Because you look at that stat line, and even if you take out the touchdowns especially, it's like, oh, that's pretty good, but you know, he was efficient, but it didn't look like that. No, Lamar Jackson was the best player on the field on Saturday by a long shot.
A lot of the quarterbacks are great. Mahomes was really good. Allen was awesome. I mean, if Stephon Diggs catches a deep ball, totally different, right? Josh Allen was unbelievable, and yet he has to deal with a loss. I'll tell you a guy who, and I think a lot of it has to do with just where he's played. I don't know that we give proper appreciation for Mike Evans. He had 150 yards and a touchdown. He catches everything thrown his way. Honestly, probably could have sold the pass interference better and maybe would have got it. He is going to be a free agent. He's played his entire career there. He's a gold jacket. Go look at what he's done in his career. He's a gold jacket guy.
10 straight seasons of 1,000-plus receiving yards.
It's crazy. So, like, he is going to be on the market. And he's still obviously incredibly effective. But just to watch him on Sunday afternoon and just to be reminded of how great he was, even in a loss, was something else. Player who disappointed the most. Who do you got, Reese?
Baker Mayfield was pretty disappointing. Like, the first interception I'm not going to put solely on him. I think Evans, it hits your hands, like, catch that. But if it was maybe a little too hard and maybe a little too behind him. The pick at the end, I mean, everything was set up for you to disprove everything that's been said about you in your career.
Yeah.
And you throw a game-ending interception. Also, before that, like, Todd Bowles kind of just giving up. Was weird.
We didn't talk about that much. Save that, because I want to get into that a little bit at 11:20, how he managed the last minute. Let's save that, because we didn't get into that much yesterday. Chopper, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Todd Bowles would have been my most disappointing, or maybe Baker, had they made that 2-point conversion, because I had picked the Lions -6.5, but they missed it. So I'm going to go with one that I didn't know where else to put this guy, but I think I have to talk about him. Jason Kelce, offensive lineman extraordinaire, taking his shirt off, jumping out of the box into the thing, lifting up a random girl who was sitting down there so she could meet Taylor Swift. Whenever they showed Taylor Swift, he was still shirtless in the box, drinking beer right behind her, which just a strange image that if you told me 6 months ago that I don't think I would have ever seen a shirtless Jason Kelce in the background with the foreground being Taylor Swift. But hey, he had himself a day. I saw him. This isn't disappointed, but I didn't know where else to put it. I'm just disappointed that he might be done. There we go. That's how I got around to it, that he might be retiring. He took a shot with Bills Mafia out of a bowling ball. He was just
Bill Simmons had the funniest damn thing on the podcast with Cousin Sal on Sunday night, where he said, I got to give full credit for this. He goes, the Kelce Swift thing feels like a romantic comedy, and the introduction of Jason Kelce and the family is like minute 100. And you could almost see the scene of like Taylor going to Travis, listen, I love you a lot, but we got to talk about your brother. He was running around without a shirt. He had like 25 beers. He was jumping in and out of places. Is this normal? And that leads to a fight and a short breakup between the two of them, and they get back together at the end, and she ends up
falling in love with her brother. It's the third act conflict. Yeah.
It's the third act conflict of a romantic comedy. And I was dying. I'm like, that's perfect how that was. Because how the hell do you explain that guy? What a hero. Player Stephon Diggs, catch a ball. Catch a ball. You're at home. Allen throws a ball on the screws that travels in the air what appears to be 98 yards. It hits you in the hands. Yeah, it's contested, but you're a dude. Go make a catch. And he dropped two of them, and that's brutal stuff. And for somebody who bitches all the time about the way that he's handled.
And that could be bad for him because Allen's cap hit really, you know, it balloons up this year with his new deal. And his cap hit's like $27 million, and he's 30.
That was bad out of him. Bud Kilmer, honorary coach of the week recently.
Just real quick about the Diggs thing. There's a, if you've seen The Boys on Amazon, one of the main villains is the Homelander. There's a Homelander gif for almost every situation. And someone yesterday had the Homelander gif of him, like, just completely, like, he messed up real bad, but nobody saw anything. And so he gets to get off scot-free was Stephon Diggs after Tyler Bass misses a field goal. And it's just like,
oh, I'm clear. Yeah.
Now I'm not the scapegoat. Coach of the week for me is Dan Campbell. You're biting kneecaps. You're talking about grit. You're pointing at the sign. You've done everything right to build a culture that now has the Detroit Lions for the first time in my lifetime an NFC championship.
Crazy.
Yeah, there's only so many coaches to pick from here, and Dan Campbell was who I wrote down as well. All the things Reeser said, and he's just, it's so cool when, because we talk about every time a coach is hired, oh, did he win the press conference? Did he lose the press conference? And there's not even really that clear indication that it means that much to win it versus losing it. But when you do win it, and then you back it up, that's awesome. And to win it 3 years after he gave the kneecap speech to win their second one, and they're going to the NFC title game, and it's Detroit, and it's just been so hard for them for so many years, and to pull it all together, Dan Campbell. So it's not just what he's done this year, what he's done in the playoffs. It's just over the last 3 years and what he's done with that franchise.
He is everything you'd want the head coach of the Detroit Lions to be. Like, if you're from this part of the country, you want Dan Campbell coaching you. Like, that's just the reality. So, yeah, he's the correct answer. That was a really cool scene on Sunday, seeing the celebration at Ford Field. Top three teams, Reese, who do you got?
Ravens, Niners, Chiefs.
That is what I wrote down as well, even though I guess I'm finally going against I was holding that Lions win over the Chiefs for so long, and the Lions are still alive, but the Chiefs look like they're turning on a little bit here in the postseason.
Well, they've got a unicorn at quarterback. So, like, you just, until he's vanquished, you just can't believe that he's going to lose. Yeah, it's those three are the same. Super Bowl right now, Reese, who do you got?
I just want it to be Ravens over the Lions.
Ravens. Over the Lions. You want the Ravens to win the Super Bowl?
I want the Lions to be in it, and I want them to be competitive. But if you're asking me to pick between the Ravens and the Lions in the Super Bowl, I'm going to have to go with Baltimore.
All right.
I've got Ravens over Niners. The 2-1 seeds make it there. Although the Niners didn't look great this weekend, I think the Ravens are on a very big mission this year, and they look ready to go and take the whole thing.
Can't wait to see that game. The Ravens and Chiefs is going to be unbelievable. I learned my lesson, though. I'm going Niners and Chiefs until Mahomes is vanquished.
He's got to be actually gone.
He's got to be gone before I'm going to ever pick against him again. Last week was the first time I ever picked against him, ever. And it's, I'm never doing it again. I've learned my lesson. He's too good. All right. Let's get into that, that conversation about what happened at the end of the Lions game, because it's not being talked about enough what Todd Bowles didn't do. Plus a pretty interesting timeline at Michigan. We'll get to all of that coming up. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're the highest rated sports radio station in America. There's no joke there. We just are The Fan. Ohio sports destiny. Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Yeah, gear up with that Tipico Sportsbook. Get in on the betting action, the playoff football, the basketball, the NHL. It's so much fun. Take advantage of those massive odds boosts for your favorite team and players for the biggest payouts you can get. Try that new Flex Parlay. Cash in on your bets. Even if you miss a leg or two, you claim that new sign-up bonus now. You get $100 in bonus bets when you bet just $25. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100. Get a $100 bonus. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. You must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions do apply. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER for more. I'm glad you brought this up, Reese. So we didn't get a chance to talk about this yesterday. There's so much going on with everything else. And I don't know that how many people were even aware what happened. So I was, as this game was finishing, I was making dinner. And so we were kind of setting down to dinner. I wanted to have it all done by the time the Chiefs-Bills game was going on. So it was Sunday night, around in the 6 o'clock hour. We're getting everybody going for dinner. And Beamsy says to me, "Dad, why aren't the Bucks using their timeout?" And I said, "Well, it must be a graphical mistake. Like, it must be a mistake from the television that they think they have a timeout and they don't have a timeout." And I never thought about it again because they didn't talk about it. on the broadcast.
They didn't talk say about a word.
They didn't say anything.
Like he throws the pick, game's over.
And it was like, game's over. And they take the knee, and Beamsy goes, why aren't they taking a timeout? And I said, the graphic's probably wrong, is my guess. Because there's no, they don't even allude to why aren't they. There's no questioning it, nothing. So if you didn't pay attention, so you were like me and you were watching like out of the corner of your eye, this is what actually happened. So the Lions intercept the ball with a minute 30 on the clock. Okay. The Buccaneers have a timeout left, and the Lions lead by 8. And they're at like the 32-yard line is basically where they're at, right? So 49-yard field goal is what this would be. So they're up 8. Obviously, a field goal wins it. So with a minute 30, it's 1st and 10, and the Lions take a knee, and the Bucs don't take a timeout. Okay. So now it's a minute 5 left, 2nd and 11. The Lions, absurdly, take a knee with 16 seconds left on the play clock. They don't even bleed it down to 0. They snap it with 16 seconds on the play clock. No timeout. Okay. 3rd and 12, the Lions take a knee with 14 seconds on the play clock. No timeout. If they had taken the timeout there, the Buccaneers would have forced the Lions to do one of two things. They either could have attempted a 49-yard field goal, and their kicking game isn't the best in the league, or they would have had to, they would have forced them to punt it or something. The Lions, it's 4th and 12, and they allowed 37 seconds to run off the clock to end the game. Tampa Bay did. Tampa Bay could have had the ball with 30 some seconds left. And you say, well, okay, those are long odds. And Todd Bowles said, why postpone the inevitable? I don't know. The Dan Campbell side, I have no idea why they weren't snapping the ball with 1 second on the play clock. That was just stupid. At any point, the Lions could have gotten the ball back. And Bowles was kind of like dismissive when questioned about it. And it was like, well, wait a second, dude. Like, what are you doing here? Like, crazy things happen. Remember, Joe Flacco threw like a 77-yard touchdown to beat the Broncos the length of it. Like, you have Mike Evans, a missed tackle here or there. Crazy things can happen. One play to the middle of the field and a spike with 30-some seconds, you can get it thrown into the end zone from there. It kind of just was like, oh, yeah. I almost thought, like, did everybody just think the game was over with the interception?
It's pretty confusing, too, because the minute 33 when the interception happens, okay, you're doing the math there, and you say, okay, if I take my time out, they're still going to get a chance to kneel down 3 times, and if they take most of those 40 seconds, that'll only leave 12, 13 seconds. And that's what he said after the game. Todd Bowles said, quote, they already had a field goal lined up and there would have been about 12 seconds left on the clock to end the ball game. And we weren't going to come back from that. No sense in prolonging the obvious. And that's where you also get like that kind of dismissive comment from it. But things changed when the Lions failed to let the clock actually run out, because they would have had about 36 seconds left when they would have attempted the field goal. So probably 30 seconds. There was a punt or a field goal. Either way, about 30 seconds for them to get the ball back and do something with it. And I would have said before this, 32 out of 32 NFL coaches will take the ball with 30 seconds left and a chance to score one last touchdown in the playoffs. Guess Todd Bowles didn't. I think he did the math in his head and decided, we'd only have like 12 seconds left, so I don't want to prolong this and take the timeout. But then things changed, and you should have taken the timeout on third down or on fourth down going into the fourth down.
Even if in your head the math's not mathing, you still just have to play like it. Like, you still just have to do everything in your power to prolong that game. Like, you just...
It's the playoffs.
So many times you see coaches do stuff like this, and you see teams do stuff like this, where you're thinking in the back of your head, there's no chance this happens. And again, 99% of the time, that's the case. But you at least have to go and act like it. And to just be like, nah, we're done, was, I guess, because everybody else kind of felt that way. Baker throws that pick, and you're like, all right, now we got some time to do whatever before the Chiefs-Bills game. But stunning from an NFL coach just to do that.
It's Lloyd Christmas. So you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a chance.
But I think, Bo, I think you were right that most people saw the interception, saw the time on the clock, were just like, yeah, it's over. And so it didn't get his notice. But when you actually lay out what happened after the interception, it makes even less sense.
As soon as the Lions snapped the ball with a 1:05 on the clock, like, okay, you don't take the timeout the first time, because then it's, you know, then it's almost, it's, so 40, you'd have 2 more snaps of 40. We'd have 3 more snaps if they snapped it on fourth down, and you'd be, then that's where you get that 10 second number if you take the timeout right away. But as soon as you let them run, as soon as you don't take the timeout and the Lions stupidly go up and snap it with 105, at that point you take the timeout.
Why did the Lions do that?
Well, I don't know. I don't understand. It was
both,
almost like
both are
idiots.
Yeah.
How did Dan Campbell? How was somebody in Todd Bowles' ears not saying, "Dude, we get the ball back"?
Can't players call timeout too?
How was Dan Campbell not saying like, "Yeah, right"? How was Baker Mayfield not like, "Dude, get us a timeout. I can throw it 60 yards. Like, we got to have time." How is somebody with the Lions not saying, "Jared, what are you doing? Why are you snapping with 16 seconds on the play clock?"
Yeah, I mean, but
he did it 16 and 14.
On incorrect down, clock management from both sides both in sides. That game.
It was almost like they both, it kind of felt like they both like sent like, you know, sent a raven to the other sideline and say, "Hey, tell him we're not going to take timeouts. We just want to get out of here." That's kind of what it seemed
you
like.
You done? Yeah.
That's kind of what it, it kind of feels like, because they both didn't make sense for the situation they were in, what they were doing.
Did Campbell explain it? I'm sure they were just basking in the victory and didn't have a...
Maybe because they didn't call the first timeout, they didn't even think Tampa Bay had a timeout. Like, did they forget the timeout?
I legitimately thought that was a Fox broadcast, right? Was it Fox or CBS?
Yeah, CBS, because Romo was on the Chiefs Romo Bills was on game. Chiefs,
so was it Fox or... Well, everybody got one, so it might even have been... It was NBC.
Yeah, you're right, it was. It was Tirico.
So Tirico and Collins.
I thought it was weird to hear Tirico in the daylight.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's possible Dan Campbell didn't realize the Bucs had a timeout, too.
So only, who'd you say, Beamsy?
Beamsy.
Was the only one who noticed?
Might have been the only one who knew. You might have been the only one who knew that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had a timeout.
So it does look like Campbell realized what he had done. He's first of all, we didn't handle that whole thing well. We should have bled it more than we did. Look, I'll be the first to admit that. That's on me. But yeah, we knew they had a timeout left, and okay. I could tell he wasn't going to call it, and so that's just how it ended. End quote.
The coach who got the win is the one who takes responsibility for, it worked out anyways. And the coach who didn't is like, I just wasn't going to call it. Well, good read by Dan Campbell. He's astute. He had it right.
Yeah, he did. It's something that it's just crazy. That could happen in an NFL game, and they both just kind of punted and were like, "Yeah, we're good. Well, that's it."
And not just an NFL game, a playoff game,
divisional game.
People go way more all out of like, "We are going to keep trying in a playoff game" than they do in any other type of game for obvious reasons.
Anything can happen in the league.
I guess Todd Bowles is just built different.
Yes, he's built different, man. That was wild. It's like a borderline fireable offense to not.
I was just about to say, like, would
to
you
not have the wherewithal of what was going on.
Be seriously questioning his. Like the longevity of his career in Tampa after that.
Crazy.
They were also,
he did a really good job this year. Did a good job last year, but like, good Lord.
They were also slow on the timeout at the end of the first half. They had a pass down to the end zone area, and he was down at like the 2, and they ended up giving him the seconds back. I think he was waiting to see if it was a completion for sure, but when that guy caught it, I was like, why aren't they calling immediately? You call that timeout. They had 2 left, and there was like 13 seconds left. It was in the teens, and they didn't call that timeout even immediately. It ended up going back up to 19.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so this is problematic. The Jackets are in Edmonton tonight. Edmonton's won 13 in a row. So this will be fun. Shelley, time up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
1, 2, 3. Here in The Fan, it's always football o'clock. Proud to be your home of the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. The Fan.
Us.
Drop the gloves. It's Shelly time.
Sponsored by Schottenstein Roofing. Proud partner of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Oh, baby, we go to the great north. Way north. Edmonton is your location where we find Jody Shelley with a little bit of Shelly time. What's your temp there, buddy, this morning in Edmonton?
You know what? I haven't been out. So, you know, it's 2 hours earlier here, Bo. So you're catching me early. Coffee time. Bright and early. The sun's just peeking up. Looks like it's about 0 degrees.
Nice. But the sun's out, right?
Always.
Always.
Always. Sun's always bird days, buddy.
Yeah,
sun's
that's
up,
it.
Big sky. Yeah.
You know, I think I mentioned this to you before. At least three of my summer vacations as a kid were spent in Edmonton. Were spent there. Where we would go up there, we'd go to that giant mall they have. We go to Fort Edmonton, and then so Edmonton and Calgary were the two summer vacation spots for me as a kid. We went to Calgary 3 or 4 times in the summer for like a week, and then we do Edmonton. Like those are the two. But they've changed a lot from the arena that I went to when I was a kid to watch Oilers games up there. This new one is state of the art. They've been there for a while. Were you up there for the in the COVID year? Because they played the playoffs up there, too, and it's all, like, connected now, right?
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out why you spent your summer vacations in Edmonton. I mean,
well, the mall.
Calgary, I get.
Indoor water park. That was it. It was that indoor water park they have. West Edmonton Mall.
The West Edmonton Mall is, yes, it brings people from far and wide. I didn't know from Montana, but this is spectacular. I mean, it's not just the shopping. It's the, that water park, man.
So
I was on that this summer when we were here.
Did you go this summer?
Yeah.
How does it hold up?
It was awesome. It was great. I'd never been in this water park before. I mean, I lived here because my parents lived here. I lived here when I was in East Coast Hockey League. I used to sleep on the floor of my parents' condo in the summers and train here with some NHL guys. So I spent some time in Edmonton, but never went to West Edmonton Mall to go to the water park. I thought it was spectacular. I mean, it was one of those water parks where, I mean, you know, my shorts were riding high. Let's put it that way.
It is, so for our audience, it's the largest indoor water park in the world. They have an enormous wave pool. Can't you skydive off of it at some point, too? Like, it's so enormous. And then addition to that, they have they have an indoor amusement park in the mall. So they have the largest triple loop roller coaster, indoor roller coaster in the world, is in this mall.
And they have ice surface.
Yep.
Or maybe two. I know they have one for sure. That the Oilers go up there and practice in a couple times a year. Yeah, it's just, this is a really great city. I just saw Patrick Laine in the elevator, and I said, it's a beautiful day in Edmonton, Alberta. And he said, it's a day. I don't know if it's beautiful. I said, come on, Patrick.
Come on.
This is a beautiful place. Get outside, buddy.
Yeah, that's it. So that's the fun of it. The bad news is this Oilers team has become a buzzsaw. They were a slow starter, but they got it all turned around now, and now we're getting there. Feel like every time we play a team, Joe, they're winners of 11, 12 in a row. These guys won 13 in a row, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is a team that started like 2-11-2s. It was crazy how they started. They fired the coach, Jay Woodcroft, and they brought in Knobloch, who coached Connor McDavid in amateur hockey and was coaching in Hartford. And he just turned it around. I mean, these guys are playing defensive hockey. They've got a great team. Their goaltender's getting better through their defensive play. And you remember when the Blue Jackets rattled off 16 in a row? It was just like, let's keep playing games. And right now they're winning games. They can't do anything wrong. They're down two goals in a lot of games. They're coming back and winning. Connor McDavid doesn't have to do his razzle-dazzle stuff. So for the Blue Jackets here, it's a big one of those games where you hope to quietly come in, knock them off, and leave them with a loss before they know it. You know what I mean?
That happened last year up there, didn't it? I feel like I remember last year at this time.
It did.
Yeah, they were kind of rolling, and then we came in there and kind of snuck under the radar and got kind of a win nobody saw coming. Do you think he is the preeminent star of the league. He's the best player in hockey. Everybody knows it, best player in the world. Is this team one that can get him over the hump? Because that's, you know, you're waiting on that, right? Like, it's one thing to play in such a northern outpost. You know, obviously the league would probably hope that he was in a market that was a little bit more marketable. It's so far north up there. But also, if you can play in a market like that, if you can get to the cup final, if you can win, do you think that they built something that can finally get to that point?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I think, he came out and said, I'm not leaving Edmonton until I win a cup. I got to bring a championship here. Whew. And this is more pressure than Toronto. Toronto's got the Raptors, the Argonauts. They got other things going on. And there's enough people there where, you know, you can kind of hide in the weeds in Toronto a little bit. In Edmonton, there's nothing else going on.
Yep.
There is 1.5 million people that live here, and they are all wearing Oiler jerseys. As you can't go one place without hearing it about how you played, what the expectations are. So it's a high pressure market, and for him and Draisaitl, who I think they're working on an extension on to stay here, they got enough weapons that they can roll teams. And last year was again, the Vegas Golden Knights had to stay disciplined in that playoff series and not take a penalty because their power play was so good. And this year they're doing it without their power play. So if they get this momentum, their goaltender's fine, and they don't just rely on the power play, look out. This could be the team to stomp into the playoffs.
That would please me greatly. please me greatly. I'd love to see, folks look on a map and just go see where it is and wrap your head on it. And And it would please me greatly if they could finally get it done. I think it'd be great for the sport if they could finally get it done. In terms of, obviously, an immense challenge tonight, give me kind of the headspace. You mentioned Line A in the hotel. This is that Western Canada trip that we always talk about, and you talk about so much team building that can happen here. What's kind of the overarching goal that you look to see from this young Jackets team?
I want them to build, Bo. This is a team that hasn't been on a long road trip. You know, we came in 2 days early, so the guys got to get together for a night and then practice yesterday. I think they went bowling or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's the importance of just coming in and playing up to the expectations that the coach has for the entire road trip, which starts tonight, and coming in against Connor McDavid and company and make it a game and try to win it. And that's how they have to play. I mean, I'm not saying they can't win. I'm just saying when they're on their best, they're playing together and they give themselves a chance to win. And tonight I see it as one of those nights. Come in, roll up the sleeves, win this game, and go on down to Calgary tomorrow for a day off and do it again. And it's just the challenge and what you can build on the road and the camaraderie, plus playing one of the best teams right now, the hottest teams in the league. I think you just come in and dust them off and leave town. I think there's a potential for that tonight.
Yeah, sneak in and sneak out. Nobody notices except for everybody in Edmonton. That's kind of the operation. You mentioned that team building part of it, and that's really where we are with this team, right? And you were on it with Sillinger a month ago, and even in the loss to the Devils, he was great. Like, something clicked for that kid. And you think about everything he went through last year and even the start to this season, got to earn it, got to get everything back, got to earn all of that. And now he's continuing it. What led you to believe this was coming for him? I know you like him as a person, as a player and all of that. But to have this type of response he's had over the last month.
You know what? I think a lot of it has to do with not knowing where he fit in training camp, the struggles of last season, going to the American Hockey League and having that urgency to come into camp. And then having a real focus just to make the team, not to be the guy that scores 17 goals, one more than his first year. You know, not a guy to set high expectations as far as every night. Just come in and find details to work on and take care of, and then opportunity through injury. That's been a key. And we always talk about that, you know, it creates an opportunity, next man up mentality. Well, that's what it looks like. It looks like a player like Cole Sillinger who's ready to gain the confidence and earning the opportunity through. You know, he had to kind of knock the door down this year in training camp and to stay on the team. And then he gets a chance with guys out of the lineup, Boone Jenner, Sean Corrali, to elevate. Yep. And he takes full advantage. And that's where you see the growth. And for me, it's a maturity and a feeling within the game. He doesn't make those mistakes, those cross-ice passes, which we're still seeing from Fantilli and Ken Johnson. And they're going to make them. That's just how it is. And until you figure out those important plays within the game, those are going to be made. And it's just part of being young. And they're young, learning in the National Hockey League. And for Cole, he's the perfect example.
Yeah. Who do you like tonight? Who's your pick to click for us?
Before I get to that, I got an interview after this with a local station. And guess who's on with me? The guy asked me yesterday, he said, will you do an interview tomorrow at 10:20 with, I forget the guy's first name, and Grant Fuhrer.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Oh, my God. Legend. He still lives up there.
I guess.
Oh, he's an all-timer, man. I mean, that's old school. Buddy, I saw Gretzky get a five-point. He had a two-goal, three-assist game at the Saddle Dome when that was Lanny McDonald, Flames. Like, that rivalry was crazy at that time. That was nuts, that rivalry. That's a special one. That's cool, man. That's very cool.
Isn't that cool?
Very cool, yeah.
So pick the click tonight. You know, Boone's just having a tough time, I think, with that bubble on. You know, he wasn't Boone the other night. It's just different. There's going to be an adjustment period for him. I'd love to see Fantilli gallop around out there tonight against Connor McDavid. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's a kid that we've seen some good moments. There's been a little bit of break in the schedule.
Yeah.
Let's see what Adam Fantilli and his line gets going here.
I like the...
it'd be good for him to do that.
I like the Western Canada using Gallup. You're going to Calgary for the Stampede coming tomorrow. I like it. I like what you did there, buddy. Good stuff. We'll talk to you soon down in Calgary.
See you, buddy. Giddy up.
A little bit of Shelly time for you on a Tuesday. Jackets and the Red Hot Oilers. Three things on a Tuesday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We aim to punch you in the face with as many games as we can. Your home of the Buckeyes, Blue Jackets, Crew, and Browns.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Our
Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Reese, what do you have on the poll?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by ER Auto Care, masters of our craft. Today's Daily Fan Poll asks, which team are you rooting for to win the Super Bowl? Ravens, Lions, Chiefs, and Niners are the options. Right now, 64% of respondents say the Lions, 23% say the Niners, 7% say the Ravens, and 5% say the Chiefs.
Chiefs fatigue, but with all the Browns-Bengals fans in our area, I am surprised that they would like to see a divisional opponent over Chiefs.
I guess Mahomes is more tiring than a divisional opponent at this point.
So they've reached like Belichick Patriots level, Reese.
I'll say I'd prefer the Ravens over the Chiefs, but only because I find Lamar Jackson so much fun to watch. So I prefer the Ravens get into the Super Bowl and to have that moment. Because I don't hate the Ravens, because it's fatiguing for me to be mad at Art Modell, who's no longer with us, for moving a team 25 years ago. And I'm spending a lot more of my energy being mad at the current team that can't really do anything right.
Yeah. I always think it's interesting with the Ravens, because it's like Browns fans put all of their anger towards Pittsburgh versus Baltimore, who is the Browns. Baltimore is the Browns.
And has won two Super Bowls since they moved the Browns.
Yeah. Like Ray Lewis. Imagine how popular Ray Lewis would be in Cleveland if they just stayed. Like, how ridiculous that would be. All right. Three things on a Tuesday. Hit it.
Three things.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
Number one for me, it's not often that I can take parenting cues from Eastbound and Down and Ashley Schaefer, but I was able to last night. We were watching, the two littles went to bed, and Skyfall was on, and Skyfall's great. And it went from the scene from like MI6 gets blown up to Bond on a beach having some fun times with a lady friend, and both are scantily clothed. And my wife goes, "Bo, turn it." And I go, "Let him watch. Let the boy watch what is consecrated here." And she goes, "This is inappropriate." And he's just giggling, laughing. I'm like, he's 12. You think he hasn't seen a man and a woman make out with either one having their shirts on? Like, come on. It's Bond. You're not going to see all of it.
That's a good job out of you, Bo.
Yeah.
Last night, it was pretty cool. We didn't know this because we went out to dinner for our anniversary, and it just so happened to be restaurant week, which that was a pretty big win. We actually didn't end up doing the restaurant week deal because they said, because it's your anniversary, we'll cover your dessert as well. And I said, well, then we don't need that additional one. But it did inspire me to get a sushi roll, because that was one of the first courses on there. And I haven't had sushi in a long time, and I've never really been like a nice restaurant sushi guy, but I've had it before. And to go back to it, you know what? I think I'm going to mix that in a little bit more. I really enjoyed it, and I even tried to do it with the chopsticks. Did have to come in and do some recon with the fork a few times, but I managed and was able to dip it in the soy sauce and eat it. Yeah.
Yeah.
First thing, rest in peace to Uga 10, or Uga X, who passed away today at the age of 11. He got to see two Georgia championships in his lifetime and that infamous run-in with Bevo in the 2019 Sugar Bowl. Hell of a life for Uga X. Rest in peace.
He's like the Abraham Lincoln of Ugas. What accomplishments.
Hopefully he's resting on a bag of ice up there in doggy heaven.
When you talk about a Mount Rushmore of Georgia, he should be on it.
He should be on it. I will tell you, seeing him live, as I have a couple of times, there's few things more satisfying than that sucker just splayed out on that bag of ice on a hot Saturday day. It's so satisfying to see. Number two for me. So the boys, they've been into these shoes. So a lot of times for Christmas, they'll ask for these ridiculous shoes. And then so that'll be like their one big gift that they'll get. And so Beamsy last year wanted some Jordan 4s. So he has guarded them as if it were the Hope Diamond. Like, he will only wear them without rain or without... It's got to be perfect conditions, or otherwise he will not wear them. So here's the reality, though. Your foot grows. So this morning, Bootsy, who is going to benefit tremendously, goes to put on the Jordan 4s. And it's sloppy, right? It's rainy and sloppy and muddy. And Beamsy goes, "You can try them on, but you're not wearing them." And I said, "Well, wait a second. Like, they don't... Do they even fit you anymore?" "No, but that's not the point." I'm like... "They're his now, buddy. I warned you about this. I told you this was going to happen. Wear the damn shoes, man." He left so pissed, fuming, stomping out the door. I did make Bootsy change because I didn't want my wife to have to fight with them as they went to school. But going to be a tough winter for Beamsy.
What does he think he's going to do? Line his room with a bunch of size 6s or whatever? And just
that's what I said. I go, "You're going to, if you don't wear them, he will." Crazy.
second one for me. So I listened to the PFF NFL podcast with Steve Palazzolo and Sam Monson. They do a ton of episodes, so I try to listen as much as I can. And I was interested in what they would have to say about the two-point try that Todd Bowles went for, because they're better at the numbers than me, and I'm sure that they would have an explanation. They usually lean towards the numbers because they're PFF guys. So a two-point conversion, it's better than a 50-50 to make across the league. So that's the first aspect of it. Kicking an extra point is no longer even close to a 100% thing, which it used to be. But since they've moved it back, it's not there. So those two go there. The fade to Evans is only about a 33% chance. But they did throw in that fades to Evans when Brady was there the last 3 years was 70%. So you kind of get the play call. I hear the math, and I can see some of the reasoning, but I still just don't agree with it. I don't think it makes any sense to put you in a situation where now you have to go and make the next one. I don't think I think they focus too much on win percentage and don't always look at, well, what it, if you don't make it, what is loss percentage now? What is the chance that you're going to lose, and how much does that change? I think that gets lost in those moments, and no, it still does not make sense to me to go for two there.
You want some early Heisman odds per our friends at Tipico Sportsbook? Right now, Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers are your best bets at plus 750. Dylan Gabriel now at Oregon, plus 900. Jalen Milroe still at Alabama, plus 950. Will Howard getting looks like the third or fourth best odds at plus 1300. Tennessee's Nico Iemalieva at plus 1500. And again, that's per our friends at Tipico Sportsbook. And I guess since I'm here, download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. Take advantage of massive odds boosts on your favorite teams and players for the biggest payouts. Try out the new Flex Parlay and cash in on your bets even if you miss a leg or two. Claim the new sign-up bonus now and get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Sign up now and enter promo code THEFAN100. Get a $100 bonus. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And I can think of no better way to end the show. Good job out of you, Reese. Two things, just three today. We'll be back and be better tomorrow on a first Friday. Rothman and Ice coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place.
Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. It's a Fan action update.
Three Big Ten basketball games tonight. Ohio State looking to end that long drought without a true road win is a 3.5-point underdog to Nebraska. Wisconsin's a 3.5-point favorite on the road against Minnesota. And Purdue is a 17.5-point favorite over 7-11 Michigan. Ha! 7-11. This action update's brought to you by Mary Haven. Mary Haven Gambling Intervention Program, where free help is available to gamblers and their loved ones. I'm Scotty Vegas.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FIRST.